Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
I will start in a few moments here. We'll start in a few moments here. This is Charles Stewart, the host of this conference. Yes. And Rick from Southern Illinois is tuned in along with Nikki. Nikki said hi in the chat room. Hi, Nikki. And Rick, good to see you. I guess you got my phone message. Glad to see you both here. We will be talking about cryptocurrencies. There's a document that another fellow has referenced. It's right there. And I think holochain.net. This is the group that is we're building off of here. And I've been involved in chat conferences with these people. But I don't have the link. It's on the holochain.net. For some reason, my browser's acting up. But the chat link should be up in the upper left corner of that window there. And I've invited Hartford Van Dyke in to talk about the economic side of this. The online computer technology that's coming through the Holochain group there is very advanced. There's been some new developments way past the Bitcoin thing that are significant improvements on what Bitcoin started out with, and everybody knows that Bitcoin has made some kind of influence on our modern economic system. It's provided options to Federal Reserve notes and the petrodollar and all sorts of, well, the main controlled money system that is used to economically control us. And Bitcoin has taken a big step in the right direction to present more honorable options for our American people and for everybody on the planet. It provides a repository of economic security that is outside of the control of the traditional forces that have monopolized the petrodollar. There's significant positive impact on human society that this cryptocurrency movement is bringing, that just Bitcoin itself is bringing, but Bitcoin is getting close to 10 years old now, and it's significantly been improved on. Maybe not 10 years. Has it been around 10 years? I thought it was 10 years, but that seems awfully long now. Hold on a second. What were the
be getting.
Drive careful.
Small distraction there. Bitcoin has provided an economic alternative for many people, and people are desperate for economic alternatives. And this is what and we've got the technology to provide not only things like Bitcoin, but similar mediums that are even superior than Bitcoin. The technology is developed. Bitcoin, perhaps it hasn't been around 10 years, but it's been around at least 2 or 3 years, and the technology is improving rapidly. And it's secure, and it has implications for not only economics and alternative currency mechanisms, but also, as the document I linked earlier here, Google Docs, that document is entitled Co-Governance. Where did I put it? Digital co-governance. Yes. I talked with the main guru that's supposed to be showing up here this evening. This document was written by this fella, Raymond Powell, I believe is his name. I talked with him last night in a conference. And I'll post the link here again. Brother Rick tuned in. Hi, Brother Rick.
Good evening.
All right. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, glad that I was able to get signed on here. It took me, half a dozen times to get on the call, but I guess I'm here.
All right. You still having problems with your phone, huh?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I'm at 47%, and this took 2 days for it to get that charged up, you know, for the battery.
Whoa, sounds like you got a bad battery. You need your battery replaced or something.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure it out. Trying to locate another phone.
All right. Well, we're off to kind of a slow start here. I thought...
Anyone hear anything from Wander Ann?
No. Just bits and pieces that she's still apparently in jail is all I've heard. Nikki's in the background there. Nikki might have some insights on what's going on with Wander. But I haven't heard hardly anything from anybody. Aside from concerns like that, I am hoping to just I'm hoping to move forward with this cryptocurrency thing. A lot of us are just living hand to mouth. And Nikki just commented in the chat window there that she is still in, referencing Wander Ann's probably still in jail. Money Mike, built another government. Well, we're trying to build another government here. And this is a new call series. It's focused more on the computer technology involved in building another government and in the economic side of it with online banking and cryptocurrencies, because we've got the technology to do this if we just put it together. And we can get enough people involved that got enough skill sets. See, it's going to take a number of people with decent skill sets to put it together. Looks like somebody else from Oregon called in. Would you like to say hi, Oregon?
Yes, hi. This is Rhoda Gelman. It's nice to be with you all.
Thank you. I'm in Oregon too, Rhoda. What part of Oregon are you in?
Oh, you are. Wow. I'm in Astoria.
Ah, down on the coast. I've got family that's been down there in Clatsop County.
Clatsop County, that's right.
Yeah. I'm in Clackamas County on the east side of Portland here.
I see. What city, what area?
A sandy area, boring area.
Oh, all right. It's nice to be joining everyone.
Yeah. Maybe we can do a powwow in Portland sometime or something.
Well, Portland is not my favorite city, so live there, been there, well, that's a cliche, been there, done that, but I don't care for Portland. I do have some family there, and there's other reasons to go in, but if I don't have to go in, I will not.
Well, it is kind of a military police state, so.
It's a liberal, I'm so sick of cliches, actually. You don't know me. I don't know you. I do correspond with some other individuals like Don Waite, the scintillating patriot. I don't know if you're connected, but Portland is weird. They go around with their weird. They go around with their weird. You know, I wish that Portland. Actually, I wish that Portland. I'm sorry. If there are people on, this conference who are in Portland and they love Portland, sorry to offend, but I wish Portland would leave our sovereign United States of America. I would celebrate that.
Well, maybe we can just get the bad people out of Portland and we can take it back.
I'm tired of all of these Americans and so forth. Again, sorry to offend. Who get up every day and every morning and just leave everything alone in this country. Don't care, not interested. Oregonians actually all over the state, and I've been involved and spoken to many people, walk around like zombies. Not everybody, not everyone is in one barrel, but we must wake up. We are on this planet and in this country for one purpose, God and country. That is who I am, and we must fight with every breath to get involved with our sovereign United States.
Nothing else counts.
Nothing else matters.
We're on the same page, sister, and our nation is in serious trouble. We need to pull something together. We need to get organized, march into the same righteous tune, and bring about some positive change here. It's not a spectator sport anymore.
It's every word you said is correct. My background is public relations. I've been in PR, communications. One of my expertise is events, fundraisers. So that's what I'm trying to do is help people come together and get organized, because I think we're unorganized.
That's mainly
why I, wanted to be here, tune in, and genuinely see how I can help.
Well, I'm sure that if you find redeeming virtues in what we're talking about, that there will be a good place for you to fit in to help shoulder these burdens that we're going to have in trying to put together a team that can actually help save the country here.
I so appreciate that.
All right. Well, let me continue to try to focus the discussion here on the economics. Are you at all familiar with cryptocurrencies and community banking concepts?
No, and that's one of the reasons I've tuned in.
Okay. Well, that's what we're going to be focusing on here this evening, at least for the most part, and at least to start out here, because I've made contact with people that I'm posting web links to in the chat window here. There's one document that I posted a web link to already, and here's the main community. I'll paste the link to them again. Yeah, it's well, why didn't that link post?
Oh, here we go.
There. Yeah, and it's called Holochain, and it's kind of a it's related to the word blockchain, which is part of the new cryptocurrency technology, where that's really revolutionized the whole thing, and it decentralizes the control of who's got the credits in the accounts. It used to just be a single online banking system that decided whether or not you had that much money in the account, and they could change the numbers if they decided to. But when this new technology with cryptocurrencies and blockchain comes through, then we've got the ability to send out copies of the ledger, of the accounting, of who's got what credits and who owes what debts in the whole system. The technology sends copies out to everybody that's concerned, all concerned parties, and that way everybody knows what the technology is, and there's no single person or group of people that are monopolizing it. And that's a big breakthrough, because it gets it out from centralized control, and it decentralizes the control of the treasury, in essence. I see somebody from Michigan is tuned in. Does that happen to be you, David?
Yeah, I tried getting my PIN number in there a couple of times, and it wouldn't take it, so I just dialed the one. So, yeah, that's me.
All right. Well, good. Lady from Oregon, can you refresh our memory with your name again or handle what you were using?
Rhoda Gelman is my name, and that's actually Rhoda, or Rhoda G4 is my handle.
Okay. Well, thank you, Rhoda. I'm really glad you're joining with us. David Scheib from Michigan has been a longtime supporter and very competent law scholar, and Rick has been a good longtime supporter and talented insight in studying conspiracy and law also. And we've got somebody from Massachusetts that called in. Massachusetts, would you like to say hi? Anybody there from Massachusetts? Hello, hello. Yeah, it's okay if you're shy. But the general theme that we're pushing this evening, and we're hoping to have our guests come in from the Holochain community. A number of people indicated that they would join with us. To talk about, I'll post links to the document again that is talking about digital co-governance. And see, this is about more than economics. Let me paste the link. Yeah, there's the link to the document. Well, for some reason it's not. There we go. Digital co-governance. Which has not only economics implications, but implications in creating self-governing communities here. Western Washington State's with us. Is that you, Allie?
Yes, that is. It is. Sorry I'm late.
Well, good to hear your voice. We're starting off kind of slow here. Our main gurus that wrote the document, Digital Co-Governance, and that the other people that are also associated with the Holochain community here, a number of them indicated that they would be here to help shed light on the issues that we're discussing, but they haven't been able to appear yet. I'm hoping they'll appear soon. Yeah.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt, but, you know, since I'm new, I'm not I'm not knowledgeable about the terminology for a holochain. Could someone just briefly explain?
Well, they did have an explanation in the document. Let me see. Maybe I can read it here. It was kind of complicated. The explanation there for Holochain itself.
Or you can send it to me with a, maybe I didn't see the link. You can send a link to my email. Would that be helpful?
Well, are you tuned into the TalkShoe page at all?
I think I'm on a different page here. Let me see if I'm on the page that it says live now, then in a little purple box, TalkShoe, join in. But the link that I first received, I'm not, should I be on that page?
Well, the link should say the if you're on live now, you should be able to open in another tab in your web browser program, the Consensus Builders page.
Okay, I think I'm on. Let me go back here for a moment. Just a second. Oh, I see. Here's all the links. All right. Oh, okay,
yeah.
With the details, there it is, https://holochain.org. That's where I probably have to go.
Well, that sounds right. And a purple button there should open another window with a chat window in it that you should be able to pick up on the links that we're posting to the Holochain webpage as well as to the Google Docs.
Okay. I think I'm on the right page now, so I appreciate that.
All right. Well, if you get lost again, let me know. But you did ask a good question about the definition of holochain. And
yes.
In paragraph 3 on, I think, what page is that? Paragraph 3 on page 4 of the document that we're referencing there. I'll read it briefly. Holographic storage is the key to maximize the adaptive capacity of a system. Holographic means that each smaller part actually contains the whole. It's how nature stores information and simulates social coordination. That's how humans do language and culture. CoGov is implemented as a mix-in built on top of Holochain. Holochain is a software platform that uses the existing internet to enable the holographic storage of data through a decentralized and distributed network of people and their digital technology. The data is immutably recorded by sharing it across the multiple physical data storage nodes, which are made available by those people and their computers. And it goes on a little bit. I can read more later. But
all right.
that's essentially a summary of why they're using the name Holochain, holochain.net for their organization. And that's essentially what's going on with these people that we've linked up with here. But it seems like our guru that wrote the document there that I've referenced from Google Docs. There's Razor. Razor 42. He's logged into the chat. Welcome, Razor. I imagine Razor will be able to call in soon here. He's the one that wrote the document. I believe his name is Raymond Powell. We had a nice Zoom conference last night, and he's a very knowledgeable man. That he's been active in the Ron Paul campaign, and he was tuned in to, I believe, Bob Schultz's constitutional convention here close to 10 years ago. So Raymond here has been involved in the Patriot movement for a long time, and he's also a cutting edge.
Now, beginning to realize he wasn't on a vacation at all. He was in the middle of some Hunger Games.
Sounds like goofballs from Texas are messing up the conference again. Those flatlanders in Texas. Anyway, we got a mute button. We mute them out. But Raymond there is quite involved in the Holochain community. He's one of the more advanced scholars therein, and he knows what the limits are presently of this computer blockchain technology and how it's being applied, and he can hopefully harmonize with our legal technology. And I have invited Hartford Van Dyke to be part of the conference here tonight too, who's long advocated about creating his own alternative banking system, where we've got enough economic resources to make all honorable people quite happy. The bankers don't respect it. And that's because the bankers are operating outside of applicable law, especially the commercial law that Hartford specializes in and that is obligatory for the courts to respect under the Constitution of the United States of America. But guess what? We've got a little problem with corruption here and the judiciary. And so just because we got lots of laws on paper don't mean that the people in actual positions of power, such as the judges and the police officers, it don't mean that they're going to respect the law. In fact, we've got an epidemic of corruption, as most of you know, that there's people in positions of power that they don't care what the law says, that they've got their own criminal racketeering network, and they're going to protect their own other criminal racketeer co-conspirators. And the rest of us are just cannon fodder to be used any way that those people in positions of power decide to use us. But we're trying to change that. And we've got the resources available, especially with these new computer technology systems, to break free from it, especially when we couple. See, the computer technology that we're talking about is just baby steps away from revolutionizing the whole game that is going on here. Like Bitcoin is setting the example. Bitcoin is already making profound, significant changes in the entire economic system of the USA. Well, similarly, our community of people that have insights as to how real law works to empower the people, both commercially as well as from the common law angle, where we've got the right to elect our own peace officers at the local township level, and they've got the right to arrest corrupted public servants, and we've got the right to form our own courts and follow due process of law. The corrupted public servants and judiciary, they never, almost never follow due process of law. But we can do it. We can do it right. We can bring lawful justice to the people, and that's exactly what is on the agenda. And coupling that with this computer technology, we can have two profoundly powerful technologies coming together at the same time, so that it's just an overwhelming force that the bad guys are just going to be running and hiding like rats or cockroaches when you turn on the lights. And it looks like Raymond has been able to tune us in here. Raymond, are you with us?
I am. I'm so sorry for being late. Got spaced out today here and realized what time it was, and then it took me a couple more minutes to get on here, but glad to be here. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're great. Glad to have you, Raymond. David from Michigan and Allie from Washington State and Rosa, I think her name was, from Oregon, and Rick from Illinois, and we've got a small group here, but they all got their pencils sharp, and we're anxious to have a good roundtable discussion with you here and talking about this new insightful technology that you and the Holochain group are developing here. And we posted the web links to your document there. And you kind of heard me ranting a little bit. Is there anything you'd like to correct or expand on that I was kind of ranting about there, Raymond?
Oh, I only caught the end, so really couldn't say much.
Okay. Well, I was kind of talking about how a number of us are developing legal insights. That's more my area of specialty, and I've also invited another fella that has significant credibility in our larger court-related realm, especially in areas of commerce that relates to the cryptocurrency thing. Anyway, his name's Hartford Van Dyke, and he's written books on, like, community banking and things. Similar to me, doesn't have nearly the insight in computer technology to actually make this a real world happening like you have. And so we're hoping that you can perhaps explain to us a little bit about perhaps some of the online. I know there's a number of projects that actually have community type banking or cryptocurrency online now. I think the Holochain community is still a few steps away from having anything that can actually be used between members of Holochain as a type of cryptocurrency. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, we're a few steps away, and if that's darn close, you know. I could just you wound me enough, or I could just start talking.
Please take the ball and run with it.
Yeah, sure. Definitely, you know, the legal experience and the currency experience is going to be super valuable. And just trying to, if it resonates with you, to get your head around kind of the new approaches that we're taking with this stuff, I'll try to help give you the information that it would take to do that. You know, I did, I was working with some guys back in 2009. We were doing the Free Lakota Bank, and it was a great concept. Turned out the guy putting it together wasn't of the highest integrity, but it was a great concept where I, you know, wrote the software. At that time, I was really, this is the thing. You know, I thought this is going to be it. You know, you could actually, you know, house your gold and silver there, and then we would just give you an automatic trading platform to be able to electronically transmit that between each other while it just stayed housed in a safe location, a trustworthy location, in a vault on indigenous land governed by indigenous people. So that was a great concept back then. And, you know, kind of a lot of us are still of that mindset, I think. And it's it's still a good idea potentially. And then this cryptocurrency thing came along and just kind of really shook everything up. And you know, when Bitcoin first came out in 2011-12, when I was first hearing about it, I was just, you know, it was interesting. It was like fascinating. This could be interesting. But I immediately noticed, like, what are we actually doing here? What gives this any value? What gives this currency any value, the greater value than what the funny money printed by the Federal Reserve is? There wasn't a clear answer to that. It was just so it's computers just doing a lot of work, just guessing random numbers, and it just never made a lot of sense. And that intuition turned out to be a bit true, that after all these years and it's gone through all this hype and got all this investment, and the value's gone up, and it's made a lot of people rich. So we've got this whole new class of libertarian and anarcho-capitalist people who are now wealthy, and who whole class of wealthy people, which is great in a sense. You know, it's really terrific to see these people being empowered and able to go out and work on the things they're passionate about. I'm kind of included in that group, although I was late to the game in terms of crypto. But a lot of the truth is there, in that it's what's happening there is not sustainable. And it's not scalable to become a currency that can really, really replace money as we know it. Right now, Bitcoin, for instance, alone, Bitcoin, all the mining that's done on Bitcoin is using almost 2% of the electricity usage of the entire planet.
Yeah, so, it's a real dysfunctional waste of computing energy resources, isn't it?
Right. Right. It's not sustainable. It's not scalable. So we can't move it into – we can't be the thing. And so some of that early intuition turned out to be true. And then what happened is I stumbled into these guys, Art Brock and Eric Harris-Braun, who have been thinking about currency solutions for 10 years. And they just – I don't know why. They don't move in some of the same circles that, Charles, you and I talked about moving in with the money people and, the Ron Paul scene and kind of the patriots and the constitutionalists and the legal scholars. They for whatever reason, they're not moving in those circles, but they've been doing the kind of research that I would have found totally fascinating. And that I really am excited to start introducing. They've been working on currency systems, for Art specifically over 10 years. He's been designing currency ecosystems, cryptographically. So what happened is they were doing all this work and they were slowly going around kind of doing little community works here and there and teaching people about their ideas and technology. And then this, you know, long before the Bitcoin thing was and the cryptocurrency and as we know it was a thing, and all of a sudden it came along and they said, "Hey, what is this? This is going the wrong direction. This is not the way. This is not the answer." I mean, they knew clearly immediately, and seeing it go and go and go was a little bit frustrating. So they said, "How do we tap into this? How do we become part of the energy to where people are exploring ways out of the old system?" Because cryptocurrency and blockchain-based cryptocurrency is certainly that. It is a step out of the old system, but it is not a step into something new, permanent, that can last. So it's great in that respect. And they said, how can we, you know, explain to people what to do and how we can take something like this technology and take some of the what's good about these ideas and actually deliver on the promises of the claims being made by these things? Because Bitcoin can't deliver on the promises. You know, it takes to send Bitcoin takes a half hour or an hour, depending on how much you want to pay, and can cost up to $10. It's just not working. Okay. And there's lots of others. Don't get me wrong. There's the Litecoins and all these other things of the world that are faster still and that have possibly better technology and they're cheaper. But still, they're based on the Nakamoto consensus proof of work. So it takes that kind of electricity usage to guess random numbers. It's all this work in the world.
That's an excellent line of demarcation there that goes to the foundation of the currency itself, right?
Yeah. So proof of work and Nakamoto consensus, which is what it's called because Satoshi Nakamoto was the pen name of the person who wrote the Bitcoin white paper. And nobody knows who it actually is. So that's another interesting thing about it. I mean, who knows who this person actually is? And if you want to theorize about what might be going on, what larger conspiracy might be afoot, there's plenty of room to do that. And I don't spend a ton of time doing that, but the fact that the person or people don't want to, you know, let their names be known, it just leads to some suspicion right there. But
Right. And why aren't they doing something similar to what you were doing in the Lakota program by linking it to gold and silver coin or something? Hartford Van Dyke has been talking about doing stuff like that. Along with, we could back it up with individual people that have different skill sets, and they could promise to deliver their skill sets, which would be something of real tangible value that others could count on. They don't do that. Don't identify themselves. After you start getting so many bad earmarkings, it significantly damages a person's credibility. And so those of us that are willing to identify who we really are and who are supporting programs that actually are linked to delivery of real tangible gold and silver, or else a work product where you're going to get a naturopathic healthcare professional or some law scholar or somebody else that's got a skill set that can actually be of assistance to you in your real life, and you can claim an hour of his time or something to help you with some type of problem that you've got, car mechanic in or whatever it is. These are tangible skill sets that you can actually count on instead of just some obscure random number that is generating the supposed wealth for the thing.
Absolutely. Asset-backed currencies are where it's at, for sure. And so we are about to so Holochain, you know, came forth, and Art and Eric have now found a way to share this technology and their ideas with the world by introducing something called Holochain, which is just a little piece of their vision, their overall vision for creating new currencies for the world. So Holochain is available. The first currency will come out as a Holochain application called HoloFuel that will be working by summer. And that is an asset-based cryptocurrency that does not use the proof-of-work Nakamoto consensus. We call it Kakamoto nonsensus.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't use that. It's using a sustainable peer-to-peer, fully peer-to-peer based system. So it shares that in common with Bitcoin, but it is a mutual credit system. So it's not this. So another thing about Bitcoin is it's got this complex token tracking algorithm that just takes a lot of extra work and storage and all these things. Currency is about an exchange. It's about recognizing the energetic flows that are happening between people anyway, and giving us tools to help automate those flows and make it more transparent and clear what's going on between people, so that we can make it as easy as possible to work with each other and to exchange products and services, and just create an ease of transaction with that. So a cryptographically secure accounting ledger system based on the principles of mutual credit is what we're rolling out. It's an asset-backed currency. It's backed by hosting, in this case, it's backed by hosting and computing power of the Holochain server network that are also hosted by individuals just like everybody on this call who right now are purchasing the Holo boxes in our Indiegogo campaign. So there's over 1,000 boxes out there already pre-sold, and we plan on having thousands and thousands more. And that's just the beginning of the network, of course. And you don't need to buy one of our pieces of hardware in order to be part of serving up this new web. You can just run it on your existing hardware as well. And for doing that, you're kind of like you're doing something similar to what the miners in Nakamoto consensus-based cryptocurrency are doing. You're providing computing power, and you're getting paid to do it. But the difference is that the computing power you're providing in the HoloFuel network is you're actually providing a service. You're actually providing the cloud hosting and computational power necessary for people to launch all kinds of applications, decentralized and distributed versions of the same stuff we're doing now. So like, for instance, Facebook or one of these big, you know, that was to pick one of the most popular things that people spend so much of their time, like something like 25% of all the internet traffic and all the time spent on the internet is on Facebook. And so it's controlled by a corporation. It's controlled by a central authority, even though they're not government. They're still a powerful central authority. And who knows, you know, they're very tied to government. They're very tied to a lot of the central powers. And And it's creepy what they do. They're tracking all your information. They know everything you do, everywhere you go, everyone you talk to. And they don't share that data. And they sell you are the product. And their business model, you are the product. You and me are the product. So we could recreate Facebook as a holochain application in a fully distributed and decentralized manner to where you get to control exactly what kind of information you see. There is no central authority that gets to determine that for you, and there is no possibility that there could be a central authority to determine that for you as a holochain application. So that is how holochain is built. I could go on a long time into the depths of what it means to be an agent-centric computing environment, the application development environment like holochain is, if you want me to elaborate on that. But the bottom line is we are creating one type of application that you can build on holochain is a cryptocurrency. And the first cryptocurrency ecosystem is being built now with the HoloFuel and our pre-launch and our ICO that's about to happen. And that that will become the actual fuel itself, the cryptocurrency fuel, will launch by summer, which is an asset-backed cryptocurrency. So we're super excited about that, and we are there. And then, you know, if you read my paper, which I know some on the call have, you can kind of get where I'm going with all this, where I'm saying that HoloChain and Holo as a company, as a for-profit company, which it is. HoloChain is an open source application that anybody can use. Anybody can use it however they see fit. And the Holo is a for-profit company that's creating this currency ecosystem and hosting ecosystem around HoloChain. But if Holo can do it, anybody can do it. And so I'm proposing in my paper how any one of us on this call can take our groups and organizations, whether it's a business or a club or an activist organization. We can organize ourselves using some electronic tools that help make it easy for us to collaborate and kind of do our keep track of who's in charge of what assets, who makes decisions, and how those decisions are being made, and creating transparency around all those things. And additionally, allowing us to create our own currencies and create exchanges where we can exchange each other's currencies. So as we see, if we like what another organization is doing and we believe in them and we want to support them, we hold some of their currency. It's that simple. And we use their currency in exchange, and we promote their currency, and we empower that organization to do more by doing so. And so this will be a system that should roll out within the next couple of months, where we can all start, you know, creating our collectives and creating our governance models and creating our currencies and having them be exchangeable. And that's kind of the vision I'm working on here.
Excellent. There's a number of directions that we could go in from here, but one that is jumping into my mind, that's prioritized in my mind anyway, is the idea that each of us have something that we should be able to bring to the table, a skill set at least, and maybe a little bit of silver or gold coin that we can pledge as collateral upon which a cryptocurrency such as HoloChain can ground themselves to issue credit to other people that can circulate around. And I was thinking that a good step forward would be people like myself. Like, I've got a few ounces of silver coin stashed away, and I could pledge that as backing for a currency, and we could put up a web page for that. And I've also got, I believe, a fairly respectable skill set in comprehending how due process of law works. And I'm available for consultations for doing things like that, and I have a few skills with naturopathic health care, and I'm available for consultations with things like that. And I think with my pledging my personal skill sets and along with my own personal stash of silver coin to be delivered to people as a promise to pay that I'm issuing personally, and I'm donating it to like the HoloChain community, they're under. The HoloChain community should be able to get traction a little bit faster because, boom, the treasury upon which the cryptocurrency is being issued has some tangible substance that people can look at, and they can go, oh, hey, naturopathic health care, Charles Stewart knows a little bit about that. I've got some illness here. I want to talk to somebody that knows about naturopathic health care, and I think I'd like to talk to Charles Stewart about that a little bit, and they could cash in on my promise to give an hour's worth of consultation on naturopathic health care. and they're under, they can buy my cryptocurrency through Holochain or even some of my silver coin or things like that. But at that point, everybody has skill sets and maybe some other commodities similar to gold and silver coin or something else that they can pledge. And when everybody starts contributing on a web page to what they're able to pledge to help support the community currency, then when we start getting a few hundred people that are all doing those pledges, it would seem to me that would enhance the credibility of the currency that we're trying to market to other people. Does that sound like a good direction to try to move in here, Raymond?
Yeah, absolutely. You pointed out a couple different examples of how to build a cryptocurrency ecosystem, an asset-backed one on promises, the assets of the promises of the service providers. Absolutely. It's a very sensible model, and we will have basically template code that we can roll out to help you build that. And I just want to make a minor correction or just clarification, I guess. At one point you said you can pledge something or donate something through or to Holochain or anyway, you know, I just want to be crystal clear that there is no central authority whatsoever at all, you know? And so Holochain is an application development ecosystem. And again, one of the applications you can develop is a cryptocurrency. And so once you have a programmer help you do that, which I'm glad to help you do, that's what I'm specializing in. It helps you create your currency. That currency kind of now exists out there on its own, just like all those other cryptocurrencies do, the Bitcoins. They're not controllable. There is no central authority. There is no one who can tell you how you can or can't buy and sell it. There is no, or, you know, exchange it. There's just, it just exists. And other people who use the same application are able to work with you and to do exchanges with you. And so it's this completely autonomous digital currency. And it doesn't have to even be like have a central issuer. You don't even have to do things like that. So there's lots of different ways to understand those currency ecosystems. And I think we have a lot of fun in store for us in the coming months and years, you know, exploring that, because what's happening here is that organizations now are existing. They're spinning up. Okay. They're not, you know, these are powerful people doing powerful work.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, so there's organizations spinning up right now as we speak that are going to do real work in the real world and help real people and make real lives better. And they have not registered a single piece of paper with any government. And they're going to operate in currencies that are not managed or controlled by any government or any central bank. And they're going to be affecting the lives of real people. And that's happening now. And we're going to see more and more of that. And I think as that example shows itself, the old system just kind of becomes irrelevant overnight. And so we get to apply all of our legal knowledge and all our systemic, how do you resolve disputes? How do you make sure that there's a common good being recognized by the community and that people that are acting outside the common good that are in some way acting as what we might call a criminal these days are dealt with properly. We get to reanalyze all that stuff in these new systems, because it's just the governments and the banks don't have any jurisdiction over these systems, you know? So that's how we get to apply our knowledge now, which is super exciting.
If I may?
Yes, please, David. I was thinking of passing the microphone around a little bit here. David, Raymond, please go ahead.
Thank you. Raymond, this is David Scheid. I was a Michigan delegate at the Continental Congress 2009. And it's nice to meet your acquaintance again on this call.
Right on, David. Nice to meet you as well. I know many, many people who were there. I was an alternate delegate from New Mexico, and I helped organize that thing. I helped Bob Scholes very closely organize the whole event.
That's awesome. Well, and I'd like to I was just looking up the cryptocurrency I think it was yesterday, and looking at some pages that I wanted to save for a later time to get more in depth. There's a couple of things that I'd like you to maybe expound upon if you have any insights about them. One, I had heard that somebody had a painting, and this is kind of what I got into yesterday, that if you have copyrighted or proprietary patented items and things like this, that you can use the blockchain device in order to cut out the middlemen and be able to control the sales and basically be able to reap the benefits of those sales in a more direct fashion. That would be, and basically I'm, I just got through with a writing of something that for all logistical purposes could be something of a book. I'm not going to use it as a book. I'm going to be filing it more as an amicus in a treatise research project. But I, the more I've thought about it, the more I'd like to personally benefit by this year and a half long writing endeavor and research endeavor that I hope that will capture people's attention when I file this along with some other documents in the U.S. Supreme Court. So the second thing that I'm interested in is something that Charles has been spearheading, you might say, on other Wednesday night calls in which we've had Hartford Van Dyke on the line. And what we have here, we have concrete claims in commerce that are related to criminal allegations against government officials who have been paid with taxpayer dollars. We got good examples going on with the FBI right now in the FISA memos and all that stuff, in which, and here in Michigan, we've got taxpayer dollars fighting both sides of the Flint water crisis, where the people are being that are responsible for it are being defended at taxpayer expense, while the prosecution is going after them at taxpayer expense. And so we've got this crazy situation going on where we have legitimate criminal complaints. Let me put it this way. I'll speak for myself. I have legitimate criminal complaints which I have placed into the courts and had them sloughed off. I've placed them into the executive branch, pressing for criminal prosecution, and been discretionately dismissed, as the courts have done. I've requested grand juries and all this stuff, so they have been served. And they've been served in commerce through the notary presentment process, in which they have acquiesced, both at the state level and at the federal level, have acquiesced to these allegations of crimes and their associated ledger of claims of damages in commerce with monetary amounts amounting to billions of dollars. Now, what we want to do is, with these acquiesced claims that have been served and been done so by third parties, witnesses, notaries, and things like this, that we want to use these assets now. These are now proof positive that these people in government have been paid at taxpayer expense and are committing crimes on our dollar, and they now owe this money back, and they are named, and we want to use these claims in commerce now as assets in a bank, and start our own banking system in which this cryptocurrency, this blockchain technology seems like it can help immensely. Now, with those two things, I will hope that you might have some ideas. I yield.
Absolutely, yeah. What you're proposing is 100% feasible. I can help you do it, and lots of other people can too. So in other words, you want to create new currency ecosystems and or currencies, right? There's a little bit of a, you know, you kind of need the ideal way is to kind of look at it as an ecosystem in my mind. But anyway, the point is back them by these assets that you're identifying. And the point is that if people agree that these assets are real, then they'll have just as much faith in that currency as they do in the whatever they believe is real about current funny money, you know? So there's no reason that can't work. And in fact, you know, so I'm proposing a way that any of us can do this on the kind of smaller scale and kind of organically through my paper and through applications built on Holochain. And we're not the only one rolling out these kind of solutions. There's a guy named Gupta who's got a pretty big name. I can't think of his full name. And Vinay Gupta. And he's got another partner. They're rolling out a whole customized blockchain solution. Again, this is Kakamoto nonsensus-based stuff where it's going to take a lot of fake processing power to make it work. But it is just another example of where this idea is taking hold, because these guys are kind of more well-known in business circles. They're higher up in the ladder than myself and, you know, people that I'm working with directly, where in terms of their recognition on the, you know, in their quality, their, you know, the resume as business people and in the current slash old system. Anyway, they're coming up with the same ideas. They're saying we are going to create a blockchain currency where you register your assets and you can issue a currency against your asset. So you're kind of loaning yourself your own currency, you know? And so it's just another example of how this absolutely what you said is becoming a well-known thought in the world and very, very possible and very feasible for us to put that, help you put that together.
Well, we'll definitely be in touch on that. And hopefully through Charles's involvement, can you expound at all on the my idea of you know, a written copyrighted thing that I want to be able to release a copy to the Supreme Court when it goes in, but I don't want to have it be such a public record that all my year and a half of research and writing is just going to be, I initially started to make it a public gift, but, you know, it took a lot, and I would like to see if I could get some personal benefit out of all this effort that I put into it.
Well, that's fair enough. Absolutely. I mean, for you to make the proposal to the world that is an asset that you'd like to have back a currency is just as reasonable as, calling up the Mint and saying, hey, print a bunch of funny money and have that be called an asset, you know? So it's ultimately, and a lot of this is described in detail in my paper. It's called The Digital Co-Governance Web. A lot of how all the fine details about how all this works. But yeah, I mean, the bottom line is if people agree that has value in the world, and therefore they agree that any currency issued against it has that according portion of that value, then it has the value. I mean, that's what fiat is, and there's nothing wrong with the concept of fiat currency on its own. There is something wrong with people who use the idea of fiat currency to pull the wool over the eyes of the masses and manipulate them into being slaves into their system. But the idea of fiat currency as a general concept, in other words, it's kind of like a mishmash. It becomes an asset-backed currency, right? To the extent that people believe it has value. And you could almost, you know, I didn't mean to confuse the issue, I guess, by calling it fiat, but if you're decreeing it has that value and other people agree with you, well, you know, there's a fine line there, right? The bottom line is if people agree it has value and want to use it as an exchange, they will. And they will do so based on who you are in the world and what they see in your work, obviously. And so that's a real thing.
Can I jump in there a little bit?
Sure.
People bring forth accusations against fairly wealthy, powerful, corrupted public servants or corporate executives or things like that, And frequently, if you're going to do the paperwork, it's nice to do it for a nice big number, like maybe a couple billion dollars or something. But the people that frequently bring forth and perfect those claims under the Uniform Commercial Code and General Laws of Commerce, they get perfected liens, which are instruments that evidence the debt of the accused corrupted individual, public servant or corporate executive or whatever he is. But frequently, they don't have $1 billion worth of assets. But they do frequently have, you know, maybe a house that's worth $500,000, maybe a plane and a boat that are worth another $500,000. They're under the assignments. In the Uniform Commercial Code, there's called the UCC-1 form and the UCC-3 form. And I believe General Commerce that Hartford advocates is similar, but less centralized. But anyway, the UCC-1 form just perfects your claim against them for $1 billion. But your UCC-3 form distributes the billion-dollar resource down into specific blocks that could be claimed against the person's house in one block, or the person's automobile or car or boat in other blocks. And so those complaints would be backed by claims against specific tangible property that would have a much more marketable, I would think, specific value attached to it than just the general ambiguous billion-dollar claim, which I think, Raymond, you're kind of tuned it in correctly there, that it's just kind of another form of fiat currency, because it's just a claim against something that guy doesn't have $1 billion, but so he allegedly owes $1 billion because he did some nasty corrupted thing that, you know, if it resulted in life loss or something, you can't put a dollar value on that for sure. But nobody is realistically going to be able to get $1 billion worth of value out of that guy. They might be able to get $1 million or $2 million out of his property if he's a rich guy. And that would be something that would be significantly more marketable, would be his tangible real assets, as opposed to just what some victim has perfected a claim against him up in the stratosphere of the $1 billion that seems to be just another form of fiat currency because it's not really backed by anything. Does that sound generally correct there, Raymond?
Yeah, and I guess I'm kind of noticing where the line is blurred sometimes, and I don't think it really matters all that much, honestly. I think because at the end of the day, currency is about an energetic exchange between people. That's what matters, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the energetic exchange has to be a fair transaction that both parties want to be part of. So we're going to enter a world here in the very near future where people are going to have to get used to doing a little bit more thought process about how they're going to do that exchange, where there's not going to be just like this one massive uniform, currency that everybody's using, or you're going to have to put some and hopefully it's going to settle down and not be too terribly complicated pretty quick. I envision that. But people will have to put a little bit more thought into how they're going to make that exchange and what currency they're willing to accept or use in the various circumstances. And so there's room for every different proposal about what constitutes an asset. And it's simply people's belief in that proposal or not that's going to, you know, ultimately determine the value of the currency in the energetic exchange between people.
Mm-hmm. One area that is a concern in bringing real traction in our larger society to this movement is marketability, to get people enthused about starting to use the currency that we're generating. And I can't help but think that when there's people, real people, that have real tangible assets that are corrupted people, that are well known to be corrupted, like maybe Henry Kissinger or Hillary Clinton or different people, those George Soros, these people could have the commercial lien process brought against them, and then claims against their specific property, and then those claims can be marketed as a source of a cryptocurrency. Claims against George Soros's home, his mansion, or whatever he's got, a claim such as that would seem to me to generate enthusiasm. People could drive by and look at it and go, well, do we really want to invest $10,000 cash in a million-dollar mansion of George Soros if we can actually engineer the local city police department here to leave us alone if we take over his mansion when he's off in Europe or something vacationing? We could do something like that. See, at that point, we'd have motivation for people actually getting some revenge against the bad guys that are oppressing people in our society. And I think that would lend additional luster and enticement to the whole cryptocurrency thing that we're trying to engineer here. I yield, Raymond, or anybody?
Yeah, I'll just say I think it's brilliant. Any form of asset that people want to propose to back a cryptocurrency, I think that's a brilliant approach. And again, it's just ultimately, you know, I could say I've got a bunch of swamp land in Florida that's going to back an asset-backed cryptocurrency. And so it's really up to people. Not, and I didn't mean to compare and say that what the comparison you're making is a worthless asset. I'm not saying that at all, but I'm just saying that people get to judge in any circumstance what they believe. And so it doesn't matter if the whole world agrees with your claim or believes that's an asset. If you have a million people in the world who do and are willing to use that currency and exchange that currency, well, your currency is going to take on a life of its own.
I can't help but think that we should be able to start producing pledges of tangible real assets, either, you know, things like assets backed up by corrupted public officials, or our own gold and silver coin, or our own skill sets for marketable services that we're providing. We could type that up and we could put that on a web page, and that could be cited through organizations such as Holochain as legitimacy for the currency that's being issued.
Yeah, just a clarification there. It wouldn't be marketed through Holochain. The currencies could be developed as Holochain applications, and independent exchanges will be popping up, and I'm going to help see that happen.
So okay, that's exchanges. Even better. That sounds even more powerfully decentralized.
Yeah, of course. There is no capability for Holochain to do anything as a central organization. It's just an open-source software platform, but yet it provides the capability for an exchange is a little bit of, you know, centralization, but there can be any number of exchanges. And so, you know, you don't have to just be relying on any one exchange out there. So people can exchange currency to currency. And right now, if you're tinkering with the crypto world at all, like I am, you're already used to the fact that you can get paid in any different type of cryptocurrency, and you may have to go to an exchange to convert that to a different type of cryptocurrency for something else. And that's just a part of life now. And to me, the decentralization, the freedom that comes with the decentralization inherent in that process makes the little bit of extra thinking and work I have to do so worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. There is joy in doing good work that's actually producing something of a superior quality for people that have eyes to see and ears to hear and minds to appreciate the quality of the product being produced.
Indeed.
Yeah. If we might expand a little bit on the idea of setting up community banking systems, then Holochain would not actually be Anything similar to that, Holochain would merely be like the computer program that some web page someplace would be using in order to bring about a workable alternative online banking system. Would that be a correct summary, Rick?
Yeah, it really is. The kind of the concept of bank, I don't think, plays a big role in this future economy we're talking about. I'll take this opportunity to clarify, one important thing about the technology that Holochain is offering. Right now, a lot of the cryptocurrencies out there, if you take Ethereum, for example, I don't know if anybody on the call is familiar with Ethereum.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a computing environment, so they allow you to do what they call smart contracts.
Yeah.
And it actually allows you to have the network not just store the token exchanges that are happening in a cryptocurrency sense, like on Bitcoin, but they're actually on the blockchain is being stored actual computational instructions so that you can actually upload little bits of software that will get executed in the same kind of immutable form so that you can have a contract to have these items fulfilled in a certain way. And once that happens, a certain, bit of currency gets distributed to a certain wallet. And all that cannot be modified and cannot be changed. It kind of brings a trustlessness again to the system, just like the cryptocurrency does, where you can get involved in arrangements with people and they don't get to change their mind and say, I don't want to follow through anymore because the contract is kind of pre-programmed to do the thing. So they've created this whole cryptocurrency ecosystem that allows you on top of that cryptocurrency ecosystem for an exchange of a significant amount of currency in some cases to actually write little software applications on there called contracts, smart contracts.
Yeah.
It turns out somebody decided to go ahead and recreate Twitter on Ethereum. And so, you have the distributed Twitter, which is great. Like, it's a great step in terms of decentralized application development. The decentralized Twitter is a wonderful thing to have. The problem with it being built on Ethereum is that it costs 74 cents per tweet.
That gets to the fact that Ethereum is not optimal. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's got the same kind of problems. Right now, the Ethereum blockchain is somewhere up 250, 300 gigabytes if you want to run a full node, which took me a month to download the first time I went to use it. Holochain is basically offering the similar results. Okay, so Holochain is not a cryptocurrency. It is not based on a cryptocurrency. There is no monetary basis. There is no monetary cost associated with anything to do with Holochain. There is just nothing. It's an application development environment. So if you know a friend who wants to write in C code, they can write a C program and have it run, and nobody has to pay anybody and nobody has to cost any money. Holochain provides the same kind of environment, but it's a decentralized computing environment. So it's automatically – any application you write in Holochain is automatically meant to communicate with multiple nodes around the world, from 2 nodes to 2 million nodes being irrelevant, that they can run that application in that decentralized manner. And there is no money associated with any of that. There is no cost associated with it. There is no cryptocurrency. One of the things you can build now that you have this decentralized application development and computing environment, one of the things you can build there is a cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fundamentally different than the other things that are happening out there. And so if you build a cryptocurrency, now you have the ability to, built into the code of that program is this capability of doing the exchange and keeping track of the ledger accounting of the balances of the different wallets. And it's really that simple. It's just a very simple double accounting system. It's the simplest program in the world. It's developed in a decentralized way so that those ledger entries are immutable, meaning somebody can't go back in the past and just make changes to them. It would be the system would reject it. It's built in. That would be impossible to do.
Yeah.
And so now there's too many
floating around in everybody else's computer nodes, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So everybody else would say, hey, wait a second. What's this funny business going on? That ain't right.
Right. It'll get rejected immediately. Exactly.
That's where we got to maintain. That's the consensus process. When you violate the consensus process to try to pursue your own agenda, the whole system turns on you right at that point.
Bingo, exactly. And we're doing real consensus. Like when you talk about, you know, what they call Nakamoto consensus, it has nothing to do with what we consider human consensus or humans coming to an agreement. It is a bunch of people rolling dice, you know, in the computer, the digital sense. It's be equivalent in the human sense to a bunch of people rolling dice as fast as they can, and the first person to roll 10 dice to all come up 6 wins, and that person gets to decide where we go out to lunch that day. That's what consensus to them, right? That's not consensus. That's one guy who got lucky and gets to pick for the group.
He's not actually producing anything of value for the group. He just happened to win the prize.
Right. And by winning the prize, got to make the decision for the group. That's not consensus.
Which is not
that
a good
discussion.
In group decision.
That wasn't saying, hey, what do you like to eat? What do you like to eat? Oh, you like Mexican? You don't like Mexican? You know, and figuring it out, and then we all come to an agreement. That's consensus, right?
Yeah.
Rolling dice and then one person, whoever wins, picking is not. That's called winning a lottery.
Right. I'd like to point out that a lot of the gurus in positions that are developing this kind of stuff, I can't help but think that they're not really thinking about what's best for the people. They're creating another goofy system that can be manipulated or that is so crippled that it's not really empowering to the common people. And then like Bitcoin, I dare say, I got bad vibes about Bitcoin from the very start. Even if it's got some type of value in it, it's so dysfunctional that it's falling short of any real serious empowerment of the common people. And thereby the agenda of those who wish to control our entire economic and political systems is being served, because it's distracting from where we really need to be putting our energies to create a serious long-term alternative economic and co-governance political system.
Yeah, and you know, I cannot confirm any particular, you know, theory about what the motivations of who or what is, but the bottom line is it's totally possible. What you just said, Charles, is completely possible, and we just don't have a way to know right now. And so, you know, in the holochain environment, it's not possible. And that's
right. But I think the point needs to be raised that this is probably what's going on in the background, at least amongst our own community, so that people aren't so naive when some new fancy, popular, well-financed social engineer comes up and is presenting some new type of cryptocurrency, like I dare suggest Ethereum, had a lot of good things going for it, no doubt, vast improvement over Bitcoin in a lot of ways, but it's still compromised in some of the fundamental ways, right?
Compromised. I mean, it's fundamentally flawed. I can agree with that. And, you know, the best of my knowledge, the Vitalik something, whatever is the kid's name who came up with the thing and wrote the paper and built the whole team around it. I mean, you know, to the best of my knowledge, he's just a kid who has a lot of the same motivations we have. But the bottom line is that he based it on some of the same principles from the Nakamoto paper. And it's got fundamental flaws that stop it from being scalable and that make it completely unsustainable. It just doesn't make sense to use that kind of electricity to do nothing, to accomplish nothing.
Right. But then the people that are frustrated with Bitcoin are being subjected to all this propaganda, bells and whistles, that, oh, gee whiz, Ethereum is the new messiah figure that's coming to save us all from the pains of Bitcoin. So we're suffering an onslaught of different distractions that are all seriously compromised, and nobody, it seems, or very few people, are actually focusing clearly on the type of serious software, comp- computer programming technology that should be self-evident, but is obviously there and capable of serious economic and political empowerment for our common people.
Yeah, the bottom line is you got to do your homework on this stuff, right? It is pretty complex stuff. So find yourself, if you can't read the papers yourself and make sense of the papers yourself, then ask somebody you trust. But definitely you got to do your homework on this stuff. There's no question about it.
Yeah. Well, those are big consensus points that it's good to affirm right here, just ourselves. David, Allie, Massachusetts, anybody else have some questions that'd like to go with Raymond here to get some more points of clarification or anything? Hearing not much.
Well, this is Allie, and I guess I should say something.
Yeah, well, and Allie is involved with the smart meters thing that was, they were using default technology similar to what David talked about to the people in the CEO positions that are doing the smart meter technology that a lot of people really detest. They were getting leaned up, they were being defaulted, and I think similar to what David said, that could be used as a basis for these cryptocurrencies. But perhaps Allie had another way of spinning what she was,
an overview of what it is we are doing here in Seattle about the smart meters that we started doing on my birthday, August 14th, but it was 2014.
Okay.
And we started, with the Take Back Your Power with Josh DeSole and showing that documentary all over and going in front of the city council and everything. And anyway, that grew to three seed groups, one here in Seattle, one in Kelowna, British Columbia, and one in Detroit where David is. And we were all using that process, and we went from calling it Take Back Your Power to the In Power Movement. So,
very cool.
And sharing all of the documents online at empowermovement.com and on how that can be done. Well, I've kind of stepped back from that right now because I haven't heard from Josh DeSole or Cal Washington about what our next step is going to be. I only went after them for something I think it was $1 million or whatever. But, it's really disgusting because I'm also Vice President of Washington Action for Safe Water, where we're advocating for fluoride-free water. And it just happens that Seattle is the greatest distributor of both smart meters and fluoride water in the state of Washington. Well, they completely does not deny and dismiss us. And the more people that jump into it, like the assistant city attorney and others, then they become part of the process. But I'm so busy working at other things right now as I'm delivering my message about safe, clean water and safe, clean energy because they sustain all living things. And the evil forces upon us have turned our water and energy into weapons against us.
Indeed.
So I'm taking it to the higher power about our great creator, God, who used his energy and put his intent and his consciousness into the water to create all living things, and how he is organic and sustainable and gave us free will. But on the other side, we have Lucifer, the destroyer, who is not organic, is not sustainable, and does not want us to have free will. And I seem to have quite an audience in things going on with that with some other that what I found tonight, I thought, oh, not another buddy doing a Bitcoin thing or whatever, but I love my brother Charles, and he says this is important, and I'll get on it. Well, I'm here, and I am just fascinated with what I am hearing.
Thank you.
Yay.
And I have great interest in what is being discussed here and the potential of it all. Right now, my plate is so full that I cannot give a very large percentage of my time into this, but I want to stay very connected with this. So thank you. Thank you for bringing what I think is this really good news forward that would benefit all living things.
If I may.
Amen. Yeah. Thank you for all the work you're doing, Allie. And absolutely, at the core principle of what Holochain is based on, the kind of the ideal, the underlying ideology is biomimicry. And that means looking for patterns in nature. And as we roll out digital and technology systems, do our best to replicate those patterns. Just act in synchronicity with what's already happening naturally. And we always believe that if we do that, that we're on the right track. And that is exactly what is the guiding principle of Holochain. That is why we have such faith in what we're doing here, because we don't have, we currently don't have like the millions of dollars yet it takes to hire people to do all the high-scale testing and things like that. But we have a very strong confidence based on what testing we've been able to do and the theoretical models we're putting forth. We've done the math, and we know that by mimicking nature, we're on the right track.
Right on. David, were you going to try to chime in there?
Yeah, I was going to say that with the notice of liability process that the the movement there, the Empower movement, has been using that notice of liability process is virtually identical to the claims in commerce that that I have been instituting, and that Hartford Van Dyke has been advocating for a long time. And so I think that it should not be given up, and that the it can serve as a basis of the banking type of ideology that Charles and I have been talking about, and Hartford's been talking about, and that we should all continue. And I yield.
Thank you, David. Sorry, get an interruption there from disruptors once in a while, but I'm glad Allie and David are picking up on the valuable contributions that Raymond's bringing to the table here, and Raymond seems to be picking up also on the good intent of David and Allie that we've got a symbiosis here where I believe it's really important for us to all stay in touch and to put what available time and energy we've got into nurturing. It's going to be a slow growth process to try to get any traction with this, to actually bring it into a meaningful manifestation of what can actually be of benefit to society here.
Nigger.
But if we're all willing to invest a little bit of time and energy attending conferences like this once in a while and doing the work to compose the documents and things that are necessary for making solid progress, we can post whatever documents we compose on the web page, you know, web pages, so that we can start building things like our own individual assets. We've all got different skill sets. We can all do at least counseling to help people that don't understand some of the areas that each of us have explored and developed knowledge concerning. Knowledge is a form of currency in itself. I don't have to know everything that might be of value to me in the near future, but if I know where to go or who to contact to get the answer for what I need, then I can still
nigger, 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 nigger.
Well, see, there's really low-level consciousnesses that thrive in disruption. But my point is that this is a nurturing process, and we're not going to get it all accomplished tonight. But we're making some really good, solid steps forward. And if we had people, Hartford Van Dyke, I called him earlier this morning. He's like in his 70s, but he's written documents on commercial default process and community online banking and community currencies. And I was hoping that he could interact with Raymond a little bit here too, but that seems to be improbable at this point. He may have gotten so anyway, we've got this is a nurturing baby step process, and we're off to a good start. We're off to a good start. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I'm a little bit more optimistic about our time frame. I have some hope and some trust, in fact, that this can all happen amazingly fast. That once we start modeling some of these things in the next year or two, that it's going to cause an avalanche of transition that just can't be stopped. And mm-hmm. And I also wanted to just address real quick one more thought I had on Ali's work was, what greater common asset do we share than our air and water? And wouldn't that be the most important thing, that we have a transparent ecosystem of exchange around? And so that is a place we can be. That is a place we can bring this technology to the commons, just as quick as people are able to see the value in what we're doing in the more enclosed structures of our smaller groups and organizations. And I really envision all that. It really can happen very fast. I think we're on the crux of a massive awakening and economic transformation, which is going to transform the sovereignty and freedom. And freedom of association, and then therefore leading to the mutual collaboration between people and the community, a building of a whole new community, type of community, and relations between people on a large scale that we've never witnessed in the history of humanity. And I think all that can happen very quickly. And again, the details of how all that can happen are in my paper, the Digital Co-Governance Web. And I would also encourage people to check out newearth.global if you want to see another organization I'm associated with that is actually helping to build the network of collectives of people and organizations that are interested in using and rolling out with some of this technology and starting to build a new ecosystem of collaboration and exchange between each other. That's at newearth.global.
Okay. I typed in the webpage in our chat window there. newearth.global. I think Raymond, you mentioned that you actually had a template computer system designed for the Lakota Nation or something like that, an online banking or currency system. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I wrote the software for a guy named Rob. I believe was his name back in 2009, and it was called the Free Lakota Bank.
Okay, is there any way that could be tweaked a little bit to be a USA National Free Bank?
Anything's possible. We could talk. I don't have that code anymore; it's long gone. But anything's possible. Yeah, I mean, if there's some need for some kind of software, I'm open to helping you find solutions to get it built.
Okay, well, if Hartford was here, I'm sure the enthusiasm for actually doing something like that soon would be much more clearly presentable in your mind. We do have people besides just the few that you've met here so far this evening that are seriously motivated to produce something like this, Raymond. So if we can stay in touch here, I don't think I've got an email address or a phone number for you. Maybe you could share something like that more privately later on if you prefer.
Sure. And in the meantime, I mean, the Holochain Mattermost server, at, you know, I encourage everybody to get involved there because all kinds of conversations around all this stuff are happening there, as you know well, Charles.
Yeah.
So you can contact me there. I'm Razer, R-A-Y-Z-E-R. And I hate to say it, but Facebook is another really great way to contact me and communicate with me for us to stay in,
yeah,
in each other's field. And I'm Raymond D. as in David Powell. Raymond D. Powell. So you can look me up there and send me a friend request as well.
All right. All right. I'll definitely link with you through Facebook. We haven't done that yet.
And speaking of linking, on LinkedIn also you can contact me there, although I'm not as I won't get your notifications as quickly as I will on Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you thinking we should wind down here, or do you feel like hanging around and chit-chatting, or how's your schedule looking?
It's about 10:40 for me, so I'm feeling bedtime coming on, and I'm not unwilling to hang around and chit-chat more if there's anything that people want to have addressed.
Well, David, Allie, Massachusetts, anybody got any follow-up questions or comments with Raymond here?
No, this is David. It's also 10:40 p.m. here. I was about ready to call it a night myself, but I do hope that that we'll be back in touch with Ray. I'm sure you will, Charles, and when you do, I hope to be included. It's been a pleasure again, and I want to thank Raymond for coming on, and we'll be looking forward to another time.
Sure. Oh, email too, for if you like doing email. Again, I won't get it as quick, but ray@newearth.email. It'd be pretty easy.
newearth.email. Is that correct?
You got it. ray@newearth.email. You got it.
All right, all right. Well, I do a lot of email. That'll be a valuable linkage there. I wanted to bring you up to speed on, I have in the past run conferences once a week that would presently be articulated as Wednesday evenings. In the past we did Fridays, but we're now solidly over to Wednesdays. But I've been doing every other Wednesdays with more political and legal focus that hasn't touched on the economics so much. And it's under a different conference call ID number, and that's scheduled exactly 1 week away from us here. And I can add you to that email list, invitation list, and we'll be talking more about the legal and political aspects in next week's conference under a different caller ID code here, Raymond, and you're certainly invited to attend there and contribute there. But I'm thinking it might be good to try to schedule a specific economics focus discussion here, again, 2 weeks from now, which would be a time slot that would be vacant for our normal political legal discussions, but we could at least try to fill in that absent Wednesday slot with another conference that's devoted to this commercial and community banking type issues that we're focusing on, if that sounds like that might work into your schedule 2 weeks from now, Raymond.
Yeah, I think that's totally possible. I'm not in front of my computer or my calendar, but if you would connect with me, you know, on the Mattermost or whatever, yeah, let's work it out. I'm open to that for sure.
Okay. I'm pretty new to the Holochain community over there, and I thought we had verbal affirmations from a few of the people over there that they would try to tune in with us tonight, but I don't see any other Holochain people tuning in here. Do you know if there's any type of coordinated process for trying to get more people from the Holochain community to try to be involved in some of these community consensus building conferences like what we're doing here?
I think you pretty much you're doing exactly the right thing. You're in the governance room. There's a lot of other channels you could look for to start chatting in. I'd also say that most of the people in that community are more used to doing video conferencing, and not to say that people won't do the teleconferencing, but it's just more of the trend these days. And I'd say also the other thing is if you got recordings, I think this is all being recorded. If you get those recording files and you share them in the chat, so you never know who's going to listen, and then pick up an interest that way. So that's another recommendation. But yeah, just keep making contacts in the community there on the Mattermost server and sharing what you have to share and building consensus and interest around whatever projects are you're passionate about. I'm sure that will continue to build interest over time within the community.
All right. We'll nurture it with baby steps here.
Yeah, man.
All right. Well, it's sounding like maybe we should be thinking about winding down here. I'll probably hang around at least a little while to open up some of the muted chat buttons here that might be a bit of a distraction. But if Ray and David have to tune out here, that's okay. I want to thank you both for joining with us. And I guess we'll continue on here for at least a little while, you guys.
Charles, this is Allie, and I would like to share what happened to me, because that might have been why some of those people didn't join you on the call. I was away, and I had the printout that I got from you a couple of days ago, and when I called in on my cell phone that I only turn on when I need it, the code did not work, said there was no meeting scheduled for this time. So when I did get home, I'm known as one who does not give up easily. So I did get onto the computer and check my email and see you had sent out an email with the proper code.
Yeah, the corrected version. I did a goof up there. I had the...
Yes, and I think that might have... That's what caused me to be late on the call. So, I didn't give up. You know, where there's a will, there's a way. And maybe those people just didn't have the will to keep going and see if maybe the code had been changed or what. Or couldn't get to the computer or didn't bother to do it.
Well, and if I schedule another one for 2 weeks from tonight, I won't have the code goofed up. So maybe we'll have more participation from the Holochain community if I don't screw up the code next time around, right?
That'll do it. With that, I'm going to bid you all a farewell and good night, and thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to getting to know you all better and building these new systems together. Good night.
Excellent, Raymond. I'm really glad you could join with us here.
And I'd like to leave just a simple reality check that I had that goes back to my God and Lucifer hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, if you look at a bell square and you put, creator on one side and a destroyer on the other side, we're all caught in the middle. Some of us are closer to God, and some are being dragged down to Lucifer, and that's one of the things we're trying to do is rescue those people and bring them back to the right side where we can live in balance with the earth. But I now see any of those who, whether knowingly or unknowingly, are sustaining Lucifer and his weapons and disrespecting God's creations as minions of Satan.
Mm-hmm. That's what they are. You got to call a spade a spade. Right on, Sister Allie.
Yeah, well, I can't call him.
Shut up, bitch. Shut up, you bigger loving bitch.
Well. Well, the world.
There's a minion. There's a minion.
Yeah. By their fruits ye shall know them. Yeah. Redneck, flatland, southeast Texas, goofballs. I guess we'll wind down a little bit here. I'm kind of feeling inspired to unmute Donaldson for just a little bit. What do you think, Allie? Should we unmute Donaldson or should we leave him muted?
Well, last time we unmuted him, didn't he behave himself quite well?
At least for the start. I forget how it ended up. I'm kind of thinking maybe we'll take a little chance here. We don't need to indulge him very long, okay?
Well, I hate to deny people if they are present.
Well, and there is a pathway for repentance from your past sins and to be welcomed back into God's kingdom if you truly repent of your past evil ways, right?
Well, that's what it's all about, forgiveness.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see what Jeremiah has to say here. Jeremiah, you're unmuted. Do you have anything constructive to contribute here?
I'd like to think I do. And I actually would love it if you guys thought that too, because I've been on Talk Show for years trying to contribute and been getting a lot of haterisms. But, yeah, I mean, I know I've been angry in the past and it comes across as very offensive. But trust me, Charles, I already know that you are not a troll. You are not a troll. But there are trolls out there. And
they've attacked
me, bro. And honestly, you're a victim of them. I see. I'm not saying you feel like a victim, but they have attacked you. I can see it, and I think this is constructive. Let me tell you something about the cryptocurrency. Local currency. Like, okay, you know the whole state, no state movement, right? Who was that has this whole no state movement? Like, free states, there's like stateless cities, you know, like, there's people that have lit themselves on fire. There's people that have lit themselves on fire in protest to this national, like, registration system, all because of the fact that they are aware of the fact that there's a stateless society that's going on. And I was thinking that what you're talking about, Charles, is actually, you know, especially regarding the juries, as my knowledge base continues to grow and my maturity, I may be 80 years old before I become fully mature, even older than that, guys. Anyway, but the point I'm trying to make is that the government that is in effect today, right, could be a completely different beast than we actually experience. Charles's perspective right now by turning this common law approach into the cryptocurrencies is doing nothing more than actually decentralizing the authority of the national and state governments and bringing it into a localization. Like, this is the same thing Harvey Van Dyke talks about. I mean, this is the beauty of, I'm starting to get the big picture now, Charles. I kind of sort of like realize that, like, holy crap, like this whole like free stater thing, like stateless citizenship, you know, and all that stuff. There's no citizen. I am not a state citizen, basically. Not even that. A lot of people have been brainwashed to believe that they're state citizens. We don't need it. It is really about local community, and this is where the law of the city comes into play. So if you've ever been listening to any National Liberty Alliance calls, you'll hear Brent Winters sitting here talking about the city, the law of the city, and that's Roman Roman this, Roman that. Why do you think the Roman civil authorities have hijacked the law of the city? It's because that's where the common law exists. We have the right to organize our own local governments. And this is why you have seen whoever it is, corporations, straight hijacking the general common law. You know, I yield.
All right. Well, there's a number of interesting issues you've touched on there, but I'm not really up to in-depth discussion.
What about cryptocurrency, though? I mean, because the thing about it is, with localization, in other words, you're trying to create a cryptocurrency strictly for common law. Is that it?
It's broader than that. Common law is actually in service to the common people, and some are cryptocurrencies. They're two different tools for achieving the happiness and peace of the common people.
Right. This is something that you brought up an excellent point. Okay, so if everyone on the call has ever looked at, have you guys ever looked at Title 12, Section 411, where it talks about lawful money, and it states that the Federal Reserve note is for the use of the Federal Reserve agents only? Well, if you have, then this is kind of an interesting point, because if we are under common law as the people moving into a currency, right, if you will, that is not, has nothing to do with the Federal Reserve note, then we wouldn't be implicating ourselves as Federal Reserve agents every time we use a Federal Reserve note. That is huge, and this is why I think there is some serious credibility to moving into cryptocurrencies, because it's lawful, you guys, 100% lawful. Use of a Federal Reserve note by you and me seems to be a little queer. You know what I'm saying, Charles?
Well, use of Fed Reserve notes is, I believe, construed as a consent to be treated as a 14th Amendment slave. And there under there is liabilities inherently attached, but your whole point about becoming an agent, and I'm sure the civil municipal judicial officers like to presume that we're becoming agents if we avail ourselves of a lot of the entanglements that happen through Federal Reserve banking systems. But we don't have to be contented to be merely an agent in that relationship. We can assume the position of the principal rather than that of the agent. And that is where I would be focusing my energies.
Absolutely. And that's why I like the actual... the cryptocurrency concept for local government. One of the things, did you say earlier on the call that you were actually going to be taking donations from this group and then putting them into cryptocurrency situations? Because that would actually not be a bad idea. You know, you could still get a lot of shit done with the use of cryptocurrencies, excuse my French.
Well,
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You could buy a boat. You could buy a boat with cryptocurrency. You could buy a car. You can buy a lot of different things.
Well, you certainly hyperinflated Bitcoin is capable of doing that right now. And Bitcoin has zero substance backing it up, similar to the that we would have actual substance backing up our currencies, what is pledged on a web page from our individual donors. You know, I should construct a web page of my own, offering my services, our blocks, for what? I think I'm worth $30 an hour or something like that. Similarly, I've got a small stash of silver coin.
That's my point.
If people bring a claim to me, I can call silver coin and I can actually deliver it to them. And that is intrinsic value, which is legitimate for settling accounts, and we can leverage on top of that because silver is grossly undervalued by the conspirators that are in control of the Wall Street silver markets right now. So there's a number of things each of us can do to pledge our own resources that breathe value into an American national cryptocurrency, like what Raymond was talking about. Hopefully,
sure.
And
let me.
Might be better to just call it a planetary thing. I mean, we don't need to limit to the USA, especially since we're governed by a de facto government in the USA that's seriously problematic.
Certainly.
Why not broaden out and? The rest of the countries can't be any worse than our own evil empire.
Okay. All right. Well, Charles, do you have anything to say? Keep going.
No, I'm good. I'm frustrated with Southeast Texas. You're going to burn in hell, Southeast Texas.
Well, look, Charles, you know, honestly, you're making a good point, and I want everyone to think that there's a possibility that while it lasts, we could literally use cryptocurrencies to benefit all common law communities because of the development of local currencies. I think Harford Van Dyke will probably agree with me. But on the adverse position, right, because I like to play devil's advocate, gold and silver, right, are actually things that can be are material, like. They're metals. Those things can be used as, you know, as tools. You could actually use that physically to do stuff in life and get stuff accomplished, you know, like whether it be conducting, right, conductive for its conductive qualities or some other quality, right? But so we have to remember that I think gold and silver is probably the best thing to have. And this is why our Constitution is the way it is because of that. Like, you know, especially when we consider the fact that if all of this technology was supposed to be around when the Egyptians were around, like, over 2,000 years ago, then since the Constitution was created only 200 years ago, you would think that the Founding Fathers had knowledge that there was already technology, electronic technology, even over 2,000 years ago. So therefore, they put that in the Constitution on purpose. It's there for a reason. Gold and silver only. Not electronic currencies. But I'm trying to tell you that it's not a bad idea to consider it, but we don't want to we want to be very careful when we work, you know, when we do it, because we've got to be completely 100% constitutional within the boundaries of,
you're a bum,
Constitution.
Donald said, you're a bum.
Shut up. Shut up!
And a nigger
You're
lover.
A fool.
Nigger
You're a
lover.
Fool. You're a fool.
Nigger lover.
Get that guy
out. Bum and a nigger lover.
Got him.
I yield. Thank you. I yield.
Well, the Constitution, Jeremiah, I'm not a big fan of that. And you seem in a lot of ways attached to that document and a lot of the concepts that come in through the Roman civil law that's attached to it. And I'm not really up to debating the fine points here with you on all that this evening.
Is that okay? We don't have to debate the Constitution. But with regard, I was merely stating that the gold and silver clauses are still valid law, and the cryptocurrency, even though that would benefit like local communities. Like I seriously think that that's the way to go. Like that's why I'm like I'm in supportive of local currencies being crypto. If you guys get what I'm saying.
Right.
And at the same time, I'm saying we need to keep the Federal Reserve note just for the Federal Reserve purpose only. So this way we have a clear separation between money that is used for governmental purposes and money that is used between local communities. I mean, I think it's obvious that we're headed towards a stateless situation, Charles. Like, this is beautiful. It's awesome. Imagine 100 courts. I don't think the people realize, Charles, how exciting this time is that we live in right now. I mean, I can barely contain myself with talking about this. We are moving in a direction whereby there will be 100 courts. If the people step up to the plate, then we can do it. But without it, we're going to be ran over by tyrants. That's what's up.
Yeah.
Can I prove Jeremiah's point? Well, when he says, if we the people don't step up. So I want to tell you how we, the people in the state of Washington, stepped up for everyone, but especially here where it was worse happening. There were...
Nigger!
Just a moment.
Anyway, there were...
I got him. I'd stepped away from the screen for a moment. Sorry about that. It's clear now, Allie.
Okay. Well, 6 Democrats, 5 women, 1 man, introduced a bill, 2341, here in the state of Washington. And that bill would have pretty much turned over all land use anywhere in Washington state to military commanders. And it was brought on by the Washington Military Alliance, which is a tax-funded super PAC between the defense industry, the military, and our state government. And their stated purpose is to continually expand military presence and spending in this state. Well, that means that they want everything to be consistent with the intent expressed in a particular RCW that continues to recognize the economic importance of the state's military installations and the need to prioritize the protection of land near military installations from development that is incompatible with the operational needs of the installation. And since 2004, the Growth Management Act has contained a process for coordinating city and county growth plans with nearby military installations in order to ensure that growth plans can incorporate the needs of these important local economic and community pillars. Well, excuse me. A lot of us here in some really, I guess you'd say, savvy cooperative groups said, we don't think so. And we sent out a rally. From a lot of the great groups that I work with here, from the opposing the electromagnetic training up on the would-be Olympic Forest, and the woman who wrote Chemtrails and the Dominance of Planet Earth or whatever, we all rallied, and between our emails, our letters, our phone calls, and our petition, we killed the bill. It's dead. It is not going out to the Environment Committee. And
congratulations.
The fellow, Joe Fitzgibbon, who's a legislator from the district next to me, chair of that committee that it was supposed to go to, stood up against it and also joined us in our savvy groups to kill the bill. So it can. When the people stand up, we can make a difference. We just did.
Right on, Alan.
But, Allie, let me ask you this. Because you're talking about the people standing up. I want to talk about the 100 courts. Do you know about common law? look, like, there is, I swear, I feel like I'm in an alternate universe, okay? Because this thing about the Hunter Course is something that a lot of people don't really recognize. It's a reality of common law within the dimensions, I believe, that we all live in. Okay? And
you're underestimating me or making assumptions, because I am now the delegate for the territory of the state of Washington through forming rural assemblies with Beacon 37.
That's fine. Charles, can you address that? Go ahead.
And I've also been a frequent listener to the NLA, the National Liberty Alliance, so I know a whole lot about it.
All right. Well, you just said you were a rep from Beacon 37, representative of the state. Well,
no,
well, what I'm talking about...
I've declared it a republic.
Okay. Well, the mere reference of the common law through localization of the currencies does not reference any state jurisdiction. So I understand your concerns, but what I'm trying to, you know, bring into focus here is something that everyone can relate to with regard to local governance. You know, like we're gonna like bring into focus local governance and how to do it. You know, without involving the state. Because we're talking about the ability of to create currencies that reach beyond the jurisdiction of the state. And that, at the local level, is something that has been hijacked by the state itself. And I think everyone on the call can agree with me on that point. I yield.
Well, you jogged my memory there, Jeremiah, to about 20 years ago. I was at a museum and a craft shop in Scottsdale, Arizona. And it seemed as though there were some people back then doing cryptocurrency, but back then they didn't have the internet or all those conveniences, but I think they were fighting against gold and silver. And in this museum, they had their cryptocurrency, which were some of the most elegant, beautiful handmade beads I had ever seen from all over Europe. In Asia and Native Americans and other places, that they were using beads instead of gold or silver. I got to go back and research that and find out more.
Yeah, that's interesting, because when you know, like, but what I was saying earlier about how I told Charles and everyone on the call and reiterated that gold and silver is probably the definite best go-to because of the fact that it can be used for so many diverse things. Like, cryptocurrency has one purpose only, you know? And when you think about the different uses of gold and silver, now you think about its feasibility. So just from that alone, you think it's more of an option. It's a better option. You know, it's something to keep around. Gold and silver, definitely you want to keep that around. In the event, check this out. In the event of an EMP attack, let's say we have an EMP attack, or we've been seeing all kinds of YouTube videos, you know, talking about Russia being able to send over nukes that are going to have an EMP, or Korea with an EMP, you know, taking out all of the electrical grid. You know, I mean, what happens if computers go down and nobody has access to any of their cryptocurrencies? Now that does create a problem, you know.
I really know how that is, because let me tell you what I'm speaking about, Jeremiah.
Lastly, what I'm saying, let me finish this point about the grid, the power grid, and that is, if it was decentralized then we would be able to control our own power, and we could have our local currency that would still be electronic, you know, like, this is why, like, this concept of decentralization actually extends not just to cryptocurrencies, but also to the way we use our power as well. Okay, go ahead.
Well, you know, I've long, been studying water and energy. I mean, it started when I was in my mother's arms and watched a beautiful big snowflake turn into a water drop. And, that's what first seed that God planted in me to know that I was God-based was all about water and energy. But when I started really looking into what was happening in with the electromagnetic training and going to... At the same time I got involved in that, our U.S. Forest Service was doing lessening sessions, which are basically Delphi meetings with round tables and flip charts. Well, a whole group of us went to those, both at the SeaTac International Airport Conference Center and in Olympia, Washington, at our state capital. And the message that I delivered there as the U.S. Forest Service was revising their 25-year forest service plan, and they wanted input, was that if we did not deal with the wireless technology, address that, and if we did not stop the geoengineering of our skies that was causing weather modification, that nothing else that any of us are doing will matter because we'll all be gone. Because with that smart grid, that means the weapons have been deployed. They are the cell towers,
right,
the smart meters,
right,
the iPhones.
See, Charles, what she's talking about right now is exactly why I was bringing up the correct sentence structure. When you told me, and the moment we clicked about, I don't know, how maybe a year ago, right, when me and you first started hitting it off, that time, I was like, oh my goodness, correct sentence structure. Yes, because we could rebut any legislation or any corporation's documents with the correct sentence structure contracts as a township under 100 courts, you know, with the entire county, power of the county at the precinct level. I swear, Charles, you are on another level, and you have a very good concept here. It just has to be focused and deliberate. Do you know what I'm saying, brother? Where's Charles?
It's the kind words.
Okay.
No, it's really right what we're doing. And, you know, even though if we don't address those things, I think we'll all be gone. But if that grid does go down... And the government that does to go down or whatever, the work we are doing will be in place when it does. So it is important what every one of us does. But,
well,
deal with it on a higher level.
Okay. Well, what you're saying right there, look, when you're talking about military jurisdiction over our states, you're talking about the state's police power at the same time. Like, this is why Posse Comitatus is so important. The power of the people to step in as the actual du jour militia is, you know, the du jour power of the state. Anything other than that is military might. You see what I'm saying? So this is...
Yes, I do, and you
bringing
also have...
Bringing it all around full circle, like, no military can enforce laws in any one of the states. So the Posse Comitatus law, right, is actually part of our commerce as well. So when we do commerce with ourselves, it's Posse Comitatus that we use in order to enforce that aspect of law. The financial aspect of law. We're not using federal power or state power to actually enforce our right to do commerce. Charles, does that sound correct to you?
Yes. Well, with qualifications, what you're referring to as federal or state law, it's actually, I would add some clarification terminology such as de facto and Roman civil municipal limited jurisdiction to the what you referred to as state and federal power. because it's de facto federal and state power that we're looking at that's coming in through Roman and civil municipal law. And what Jeremiah is talking about with posse comitatus and coming up from the grassroots, from the 100 courts and things like that, is de jure organic, judicially administered by juries, consensus-based law. And that's the true organic law based upon the consensus and the consent and the will of the people, as opposed to the private Roman civil municipal corporation that is functioning in top-down Roman Empire fashion.
Exactly. And when there's a local currency that actually would pay the debt that is being charged for, then possibly that would be a remedy, right, Charles? I mean, if we have a local currency, I don't know how you say it so eloquently. It's really difficult to follow you, Charles. Allie, I yield.
Okay, because this is Allie coming back in, and I'm going to ask you all a question which I probably think you know the answer to. So who is the biggest user of the oil and gas industry and the biggest user of the wireless technology and the biggest part of our budget?
Department of Defense.
Bingo. The military-industrial complex.
Oh, I guess Donaldson does know
something.
We
have a problem there because... And the problem we have there is to have safe, clean water and safe, clean energy, we have to have peace. You can't have one without the other, and you can't have either of them without peace. And I was really amazed because over 20 years ago, I started talking about the worsening global water crisis. And just today, RTTV started doing a special on the last drop of water, showing how they're trying to privatize all of our water.
See, this is where we could, cryptocurrencies could be of value, because at the local level, making sure that all those needs are met under the guise or the scheme of cryptocurrencies, at least while we have it, would be a valuable resource for all the local communities, especially if there was some value placed on those. I mean, if you think about AMTV, this little media outlet that has gone from nothing into this huge, like, hundreds of thousands of views and, like, apparently, allegedly, you know, like, very successful media company, independent media company. You know, all based around the investing into cryptocurrencies and the use, the proper use of cryptocurrency. You know, I think it's an extremely important part of organizing local government, is organizing local currency as well. And there is a reason why there was a huge no state movement long before what we're talking about right now, which is basically the bringing in of the local governments under de jure construction.
I'd like to point out, shifting focus a little bit, the 100 courts. Allie, are you in King County?
Yes, I am.
That's probably the largest population county in the Pacific Northwest,
between Everett and Seattle is now the number one worst commute in the United States.
Really? The traffic jams?
Well, yes, because they've under fraudulent terms. Put all the money in the smart grid or the fast rail and not improved our roads.
Yeah, a lot of social engineering is going on in the Pacific
Northwest. It is. A tremendous amount of social engineering is going on here because they're all members of the ICLEI, the International Council on Local Environmental Initiatives, which is the working division of the UN Agenda 21.
Right on the money, sister. Right on the money.
Yeah, I discovered that when I was an elected official and wondered where my stupid city council came up with all the wording for their growth management plan.
Okay, well, we might want to think about you figuring out which precinct you're in so that you can claim the judicial office for your precinct. And Oregon statute, I think, probably reads similar to Washington statutes, but the judicial officer of your precinct, which is probably vacant right now, has authority to command the obedience of everybody connected with any case that affects anybody within their precinct. And it sounds like the smart meters and the water and the air for the people of your precinct is being affected by a lot of these big, fat, ugly corporations that are surrounding you there in the Seattle area, surrounding your precinct. And they're under, like the Oregon statute recognizes, the judicial officer has the right to command the obedience of however many people it takes, posse comitatus, to go in there and shut down that corporation. Just march in there and tell everybody to get out, or at least tell the CEOs to get out and start taking over the corporation and start running it more honorably, or else just dismantle it and use the building for something else, whatever's necessary, because you're justified in doing it. See,
well,
this guy. Go ahead.
Our Attorney General, Bob Ferguson, who I have not a great deal of respect for, but in his 21st lawsuit against Trump, I thought he was supposed to be here representing us in the state of Washington, but I'm behind him on this one because he has now stood up and said that there will be no offshore drilling on the coast of Washington.
Yeah, sometimes they do good.
Well, yes, because and just like down there in Oregon where you are and down in California, our coastal towns and communities are a big part of our economy.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, sister, our general movement here, there's a lot of people that have right-wing tendencies, and there's a lot of people that are correctly thankful to God that Donald Trump beat out Hillary Clinton. But that doesn't mean Donald Trump is an angel of light here, and he's in a lot of ways he's selling out to the military-industrial complex, and he's doing the pollution for the oil companies and stuff like you're pointing out, and he needs to be called to account when he's doing bad like that.
Military. So that's my issues with him is about safe, clean water and safe, clean energy. But when I look deeper into my research on Donald Trump, I find that he is exactly 2 months to the day older than me. He was born on June 14th, 1946, and that makes him a Gemini. Sign of the twins. Well, we have to see which twin is he really.
Yeah,
because
yeah. There's a possibility of two-faced there, isn't
it? You know, I love some of the things he's doing about human sex trafficking.
He's got a good side to him, no doubt. But
he's got a good twin and he's got a bad twin. Which one is he going to inhabit?
Well, and just because we support the good twin doesn't mean that we got to put up with the bad twin.
He got that right. We got to call his attention to it. But Osher wouldn't be in the swamp he's in right now, especially
more than that. There's probably a whole lot of people in the USA that could do a whole lot better job than what he's doing.
But no one has enough balls to step up to the plate, Nikki.
Nikki.
Right? Well, wasn't that Nikki that was just speaking?
No, Allie.
Allie, sorry. Allie. I'm saying no one, Donald Trump is our, like, like, he's this guy that just stepped up, right, that was utilizing the propaganda that came from the Patriot movement, in my opinion. Like, he's nothing more than just a tool for the agenda, 21, 30, and all the rest of them agendas. You know, like, if you really think about it, there's no reason why we should believe that he actually gives a damn about any one of our local communities. I mean, cryptocurrency, using different ones like Ethereum, Bitcoin, as well as some of the others, very popular ones that are coming up, coming around, like, and even development of new ones should be something that we focus on. I mean, like, understanding that the federal jurisdiction doesn't apply directly in the state is crucial to understanding how the effect of the president's actions are pointless and meaningless. They don't have an effect in the states. Charles, do you want to respond to that? I mean, like, unless, right? What I'm talking about is the several states. See, I'm not talking about the state. There's this huge confusion between states and territories versus the several states, which are basically the 48 states that are several, meaning they're sovereign. You know what I mean?
The phraseology used in the Declaration of Independence was an independent.
Right. Well, when I say several, you know what I mean? I mean, there's, like, if I sever a piece of meat, I separate that piece of meat, you know, in half with a knife.
Yeah.
So the several states are nothing more than states that are separate. They're several, you see? And so the several states that are divided are the 48 ones, necessarily, or the 50, right?
Well, I like to use enough descriptive words to make it idiot-proof, and if you use various words from different angles, like de jure, organic, sovereign, that you pile off on enough good power decentralizing descriptive words to one side of your equation, then that side of your equation becomes idiot-proof, clear, exactly what you're talking about. But frequently, ambiguous terminologies are used on one side or the other side of the equation, and then the whole dichotomy that is trying to be illustrated is
actually, well, this is why I think the Constitution is valuable, is because in it references the several states, and it's talking about where you and I live from organic, you know, body politic. Care, you know, our place in organic body politics. And it says that the citizens of the states don't have any less rights than the citizens of the several states. At one point, it says that, right? I think it could be in the 5th or the 14th Amendment. But the idea is that it makes a clear distinction between the several states and those of the D.C. territories. And that means something. It really does, believe it or not. And when you and me step up to create our local community under 100 courts, that's common law. That's common law of England. And in some ways, it was like, you know, the founders gave us a way out. They knew the way and of the tricks of the lawyers, that the lawyers were going to try to use certain things to try to get over on everybody, but that if so, they embedded this law, this technology of the common law of England into the Constitution as a protection and a guarantee for the people, that if they wanted to, they could actually install de jure government if they wanted to, if it got too taken over by de facto factions.
Well,
that's
well,
why
I
we
got
have
news for
our
you.
Common law courts.
The 1787 convention created a de facto government. They had de jure under the Articles of Confederation, but when they moved to the Roman civil municipal model of government, they became de facto with the 1789 affirmation of the 1787 Constitution.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's not de facto right now. What I'm saying is that if we wanted to, we could move into a de jure condition of government based on what the founders did for us. With the common law of England.
I'm not inclined to be beholden to the framers of the 1787 document. But that doesn't mean, I do agree with your premise, if I might reword it, in a more comfortable manner, in that there are many passages and phrases in the U.S. Constitution document that we can capitalize on and use in to our advantage to dismantle the evil empire that's grown up on the founding.
I would like to add that one of the biggest cases that has happened in U.S. history that very few people know anything about, and I want to begin that with saying, giving my thanks and gratitude to Lavoie Finicum, who lost his life trying to educate people about their constitutional rights. And
it's
now been, resolved, or the whole case was thrown out because of prejudice, and they're all being set free. But I think that is really, really interesting, because one of the things that it's uncovered is that the BLM is a foreign entity, a corporation that is registered in Puerto Rico.
All right.
About the IRS, but I didn't know BLM was also a Puerto Rico corporation.
Well, neither did I. I just found that out.
They have to be. That makes total sense.
Do they have to come in and take property away from that's been in their families since the 1800s?
Right. Mm-hmm. What documentation for this Puerto Rico connection for BLM, Allie?
I'm sorry, I don't have that information handy right now.
Okay, is it a rumor, or do you have some more substance than that, or what?
Well, I haven't really researched it myself. I heard it online, I heard it in, because I heard it doesn't mean it's true, but it makes good sense to me. But I do not have proof to show
here's
that.
Here's what it is, Charles. It's that Congress has authority to create all meaningful rules and regulations to, you know, administer for specific constitutional authorities. So what they end up doing is creating departments that are under the regulatory authority of Congress, and that's what the Bureau of Land Management is. It's an agency that is directly under the regulatory authority.
Yeah, I'm really
Congress.
Clear on all that. What I was looking for clarification was any possible Puerto Rico connection there, Jeremiah.
Well, that connection with Puerto Rico is that it's part of the District of Columbia territories of the United States. It hasn't, like, I think that may be a distraction. Maybe they started their, you know, department in Puerto Rico, and therefore they have their founding documents in Puerto Rico, brother. You see what I'm saying? Just like if you have your founding documents in Oregon. Nothing different.
Well, yes, and they destroyed the place where the founding documents were here with four fires over in eastern Washington. And look at the state that Puerto Rico is now in without power or water. Were they destroying documents there too?
Okay, but that's a different issue. You're bringing up all these issues. I'm trying to focus.
It's the same issue.
You're talking about power and water now. How do you want to talk about power and water, or do you want to talk about, I don't know.
No, I'm talking about destroying documents.
Okay. Destroying documents.
Yes.
That
could be used against them for the crimes they've been committing.
Well, that was not what you originally talked about. It was basically that the BLM was founded in Puerto Rico. Well, you weren't even talking about destruction
of
documents.
No, I didn't say it was founded. I said it was registered.
Okay, so that was the original point, but now we're on to talking about destruction of documents. So how do we get to that?
Yeah, West Washington State, that was totally off what you guys just did. Donaldson is totally on point there. So, I mean, we just get back to the point of the original thing what Donaldson was talking about. Way to go, Donaldson. You're pretty cool, man. You're doing awesome.
Hi, Money Mike.
Hey, Charles. How you doing? I'm a heel back.
Well, I think Ali's point was legitimate there, but we did kind of get multiple points involved in the same discussion all at once. Ali.
Right. I like Ali. It's just got convoluted. That's all.
Well, we don't need to be anal about jots and tittles when there's only three or four of us here. You know, if it was a big group discussion, and it is good to try to do one point at a time, and maybe Ali was taking a little bit of extra liberty there and moving quickly to another subject that seemed important to her. But I don't think we need to be anal about when one participant in the discussion shifts subject a little bit. We can return back to it as by circling around without directly confronting people in ungraceful manners like this.
Like the one that Money Mike just did. Right. I was not trying to insult Ali at all. I was merely trying to steer the direction of the conversation in a way that would be...
Well, Ali was trying to get in a different direction about the destruction of the documents there, I think.
Okay,
see,
so what about that?
Conflict between different people trying to take the conversation in different directions. It's usually the person that has the floor, which I believe was Ali, that has the latitude to do it. And then you can wait until she's done talking and then try to take it back without making a big old flame war out of it.
Sure, Charles. I respect that. Ali, can you please explain about the destruction of the documents, please, so that we can get back on?
You mean here in Washington State for our state constitution?
No. Puerto Rico. You were talking about destruction of documents in Puerto Rico, right?
Well, when I look at the destruction of documents and then I hear the BLM was registered there, that means there's a lot of documents. Well, you know how that hurricane or whatever it was that went and just completely destroyed Puerto Rico? They're without power, without water, all these months later?
Yeah.
I heard about it.
Right? Yeah, so if that was a geoengineered storm, it was done to destroy all the records that they had filed in Puerto Rico.
Which relates to BLM.
Okay.
Yes, so... You know, I have to look at all the pieces of the puzzle and see if I can fit them together. And quite often I can fit them together, but sometimes I'm totally wrong. I'll admit that. But I have to look at all the pieces of the puzzle because that was the mission I was sent on to do, to get to the glory of God, to do His work. You need to know the rest of the story.
Good point. It's a good point. I mean, Ali, you brought up good point. If you think geoengineering played a part in the destruction of the BLM's documents out there in Puerto Rico, so no one would be able to track that the BLM was from Puerto Rico, well, how did you find out about it?
Well, I have a wonderful large circle of truth warriors that are bringing out the truth and the details. And of course, like anything that I look at, I have to sift through it because I can't accept others' beliefs as my truth. I have to go deep within myself and find my own truth. And my own truth is following God.
Wow. Okay. I love God, by the way, just so you know. And I love this call. I also love Ali, Charles, and Money Mike. You guys are great people. You guys are doing a lot of good work. I think she brings up a really good point, Charles, about the destruction of documents, you know, through natural catastrophes or would-be natural catastrophes or whatnot. But this brings a heightened level of scrutiny, I think, to the primary purpose of your call, which is that at the local level, right, we can have our best effect. Our best effect can be had at the local level, not on some national level, you know, whereby we rely on national benefits or state benefits, you know, but through local currencies, through the development of local products and local governance, we're going to be able to actually create, basically, it's like a world community, basically, based around common law, around the common law of England, which is embodying most of the principles of the natural law. So this is why they talk about the common law of England so much, is because it embodies a lot of the principles of natural law. So yeah, like all this talk about, like, you know, like the BLM and all that, that's all great and stuff, right? But getting back to the brass tacks of it all, you bring in an excellent point. This is why we need to focus on organizing at the local level, so that way we're not getting run over by national agencies. Are you?
And I'd love to come back on that with a really quick short story. I got a call from a retired nurse who has a radio program. She wanted me to be on her program to speak about smart meters. And she's the first person who's ever wanted me to be on a show who wanted to do a pre-interview. So as we were doing the pre-interview, she said, "Oh, wait a minute, Allie. There's something that you need to know. This is a Christian radio station." And I said, "Oh, well, then there's something I should tell you. I don't need a church to connect me with God and his son, Jesus Christ, just like I do not need the government and an insurance company to connect me to health care." I stopped her dead in her tracks, this retired nurse.
Did you complete the interview?
No, I never went on to her show. But she got another guest, but he dropped out. And the next morning I got an email from her with a sense of urgency that her guest had dropped out. Would I appear on her show? Well, I said, okay, but God works in strange ways. I got the times mixed up. I tried to get on the show at 2, and it was at 3, so I wasn't able to get onto the show.
Hey, Nikki, that's awesome.
If you're speaking of the Nikki,
I
appreciate that.
Nikki and Allie, you're both impressive. I want to contact you. I want you to contact me. I would like to talk to you, with you, you know, like in private.
Well, email Charles and he can give you my contact information.
No, that's okay. I'm going to give you my phone number right now. If you have a pen handy, that's okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You can call me. It's 415-424.
Wait a minute. Hold it. Start
what?
Again.
Yeah. 415.
Area code?
Yep. Area code 415-424-3276. That's area code 415-424-3276. Contact the Donaldson with questions about the common law, but also just a dialogue and to catch up. Getting back to the Charles call about consensus, I think it's important to get consensus, and that is why I gave out the number. I would like to dialogue with you because I know there's deeper levels that we can go into than are appropriate for this level of conversation on this call right now. Charles, what do you wish to talk about?
Well, I was going to build on, you said something about very powerful at the local level, the best way to organize is at the local level. I was going to expand on that by saying that it's actually the most powerful at the local level. Our township level peace officers are the ones that are authorized to carry guns and make arrests and administer force, which is where the real power is at. And that's on the outer fringes. I've currently been thinking of trying to imagine the sun, only consider that maybe its outward appearance is our understanding of its appearance anyway is way different than what it is. Maybe its outward appearance with the hot surface, maybe that is like our peace officers on the outer fringe, and everything on the inside is cooler. Maybe the inside of the sun is cool instead of hot, like the normal physicists say. And similarly,
hey, Charles.
Let me finish, please.
Yes, I apologize.
Whether the sun is hot or cold on the inside, I don't know. But the more centralized parts of our governmental authority, the delegation, when it comes up to the precinct level, that's a judicial power, that's not really concerned with force administering anymore. It's more concerned with administration of justice because that's the precinct level 100 court, and similarly on up with the county court, and then the state Supreme Court, and then the American National Supreme Court. Each of those are concerned progressively about administration of justice, which is not where the hot spot is at. The hot spot is out there in the badges and the guns of the peace officers that are dedicated to keeping the peace for the nation, the executive officers. And so that goes to supplement Jeremiah's point that it's best to be organizing and to work at that local level, because closer you get to those outer fringes of your township and your precinct level local communities, it is truly fundamental common law 101 that is where your most powerful place is at. And I dare suggest township and precinct level peace officers would have authority to arrest the President of the United States if just cause was shown to do so. And they're under I yield, mm-hmm. I think, was going for.
Money Mike wanted to say something.
Hi. Yeah. I'm not going to interject. I'm actually going to, I'm going to agree with a thing about the authorization thing. It seems like when you said they're authorized to carry guns and stuff, well, you know, it's because they're authorized. So if you want to go into a society where you need to be authorized for something, I mean, I guess that's all right. But what am I trying to get at? Oh, darn. Oh, I lost my train of thought. Damn it. I do want to say
authorization.
That
you're
on point.
Authorization.
Yeah. Oh, and also I'm going to say that, Donaldson, you were also, I finally actually caught the gist of what you were saying earlier about the Bhaktivedanta's thing, although that might be off topic at this point, but I just want to say that I agree with what you said. I agree with what you said. Finally.
Yeah.
I finally caught what you said, and that was pretty awesome. So.
Oh, excellent.
But other than
that,
yeah.
Pasi Kamatatis, man. That's an interesting point.
Other than that, I forgot the name of the female speaker. Forgive me for forgetting your name.
Allie.
Allie, okay. Allie, you were on point earlier too about some things. I forgot what they were, but I'm gonna go back to this call tonight, and I'm gonna replay it, and I'm gonna listen to all three of you. And I'm getting little bits of information that's clicking with everything, and I'm making huge realizations.
Well,
here, so this is
I think we owe
stuff.
Credit to Charles. Charles
yeah.
gets all the credit money, Mike, because he's the one that came up with the idea for the call tonight. Check this out. To talk about cryptocurrencies and the effect there on the common law and in the common law and how we can use it. And if it wasn't for that direction, we probably wouldn't be talking about these things. So, Charles, kudos to you.
Yeah. And I would also say that everything that Charles says, like not just on this call, but all of his other previous calls, there is an understanding, there's a clear definition of everything he's saying, and you know once you keep listening, you know the best thing is always listen, and that's why I myself try never to speak too much as I can, because even though whenever I'm talking, you know, like I always have a hard time getting it out. And yes, but you know, once again, I have to realize it. All right, let me go back.
Can I interrupt you for a second, Mike? Charles, let me ask you a question. I'm sorry.
I'm going
to
yield back.
But I just had this interesting thought. How much of this cryptocurrency strategy could be used by some of the Hartford Van Dyke strategy? If we were to incorporate cryptocurrencies with some of the Hartford Van Dyke stuff, how would that flow, Charles? And
well,
Money Mike, feel free.
Yeah, and Allie. At least the earlier portion of your terminology there seemed to denote one of them being used by the other, kind of like a principal and agent relationship. And I would dare suggest that both concepts are more or less equal. Hartford's commercial law strategy and the cryptocurrency strategy. I don't think one would be used by the other. I think it would be better to think of them as approximately equal innovative technologies that if we try to merge them together, that would be a more accurate description of the dynamic that we're trying to engineer rather than one being above the other.
All right, let me ask you again another question about it. Since you know Hartford, I've spoken to him one or two times on the phone myself. Does he speak about cryptocurrencies?
No.
Okay, and does he have, like, so what is his agenda for the local currencies? And how would you, are you saying that you could start basically like a trust, a local trust, right, that would basically encompass a specific township? And you could get all of the money. In other words, all of the tithing would be basically in cryptocurrencies, and therefore it would be kind of it would be lawful money because it would be the best alternative to the Federal Reserve note, as it is not lawful money, as it says so in the law, for Section 411 of Title 12. Right, Charles?
Well, my description of lawful money would be money harmonious with common law, and they're under,
okay.
I think we do have lawful money here.
Well, yeah, I mean, right. Okay, so the Federal Reserve note, as far as I know, is not lawful money. But it is redeemable for lawful money, right? Meaning you get lawful money or something like it. And lawful money is also considered to be legal tender. I mean, that's that little gray area. You know, and legal tender, it should be abolished if gold and silver are to be the mainstay of our economic form. You know, you get what I'm saying? Like, why have legal tender if gold and silver are the only form of conveyance? Can you answer that question? Why do we need gold and silver? I'm sorry. Why do we need legal tender? Excuse me. Sorry about that.
We only need legal tender if our common law is adulterated with commercial law. If we have a pure common law society, we live in a barter-based society. And Kevet Emptor, buyer beware, is operative, and you don't turn loose of your gold and silver coins until you get the widgets, and you're satisfied with the widgets, and then you give your gold and silver coin. And there's no need for any military, police state, goon squad out here enforcing contracts and kicking people out of
home. What do you mean by widgets, Charles? What do you mean by widgets?
He means legal tender. Go ahead, Charles.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
It's another commodity to be trading gold and silver coin for.
Oh, okay.
The U.S. all encompassing term.
But good point, Charles. Excellent way to you know, bring it all back
Theory. Question three. I've had a theory that cryptocurrency was a derivative. What do you think about that possibility? Because I hear people always talking about derivatives, how bad they are. I don't know if I could throw that at you.
Well, I'm kind of ambiguous about what the term derivative.
Yeah, me too. You know, that's why I asked.
At that point, it looks like big old.
I'm always confused about that word too. It's like. I used to think it was. It seems to me like derivative is just a fancy word for distraction. In other words, distracted from the real goal of whatever the next big thing in money is. And this cryptocurrency just seems to be too new, too real, too soon yet to just dive into it.
I like the boldness
what they're doing though, but my observing
okay,
at
Mike,
this point is
Mike,
nothing to do.
Mike, it goes beyond cryptocurrencies. This technology
exactly.
extends into blockchains, and blockchain technology goes beyond cryptocurrencies. So understand how if we could basically do a township charter or a precinct charter and organize it under blockchain technology, and it would never be able to be, it would be basically purified and authenticated based on this blockchain.
Okay, so it would have to be also, it would be an acceptance of, okay. We'd have to,
I mean, I have to get more information to be able to explain it better, but maybe Charles has already done research and maybe he can explain it better. But I think, Charles, what do you think about that idea? Like this idea that local charters that are started at the precinct level, not county level, but below that, right? We're talking, you don't need legislative authority or approval to start it. Right? You do that. And you do it through blockchain technology, and so no one can sit, you have basically some sort of foolproof way where you didn't even have to use the state to authenticate at all. See, a lot of times right now when you use your state notary and you use court orders, it's all about getting state authority and state approval. But through the blockchain technology, it eliminates that third party. Charles?
Well, thank you, Jeremiah. But the choice of words there is I habitually feel compelled to part with you in the manner in which you choose your words doesn't specify adequately. When you're referring to the de facto state and the Roman civil municipal government of the state, you just clump it all together as the state. And when you're talking about the organic sovereign state as opposed to the Roman civil municipal government of the state, the local precinct and counties are political subdivisions of the state, and they're not different entities. It's like your finger is part of your human body, but it's like a political subdivision of your human body. It's a specific entity, finger.
Except for the fact that most of the offices are vacant right now, Charles, right? And that if it's all de facto.
Right, but the bodies are still there. The communities of people are still there.
Mm-hmm.
They're not organized. They're not specifically delineated, but there are communities of hundreds of conscience-bound people that would presumably have qualified elector status that can generally be referred to as precinct-level communities.
I like it. I mean, I'm 100% with that. And I want
to
see
at that point, all we need to do is communicate to those people that they have authority to stand up, elect their own judicial officers, and those judicial officers have the authority to command a 100-man army to go out and kick the snot out of anybody that's installing smart meters or doing anything else that we don't want.
I think that involves bringing the district power to the precinct level right now, because what we have is... Sorry about the noise. Is a scenario whereby you have the Superior Court exercising its jurisdiction over all the different precincts, making all of its, making its precedents the precedents in that precinct. You see, and that's a tragedy. It's travesty. It's also it's B to the F.
In Oregon, those courts are called circuit courts, and they're also referred to as courts of limited jurisdiction because they derive their authority from the Roman Empire model of government. And the early constitutional law scholars recognized that the Roman Empire model of civil municipal government is inferior. And that's why their courts, the superior courts of general jurisdiction, are limited. If and when the people ever get their poop together and start responsibly self-governing in their own communities, they've got the authority to speak with higher law than that of superior or circuit court.
Yeah.
Government, which is inferior in limited jurisdiction. That phrase, limited jurisdiction, occurs frequently in
actually, Charles,
constitution as well as state constitutions and statutes.
Oh, one thing that you just mentioned, you said something about circuit courts not being... Okay, well, let me just say something about that. Is that I read... somewhere, I have something somewhere, that the decisions of circuit courts cannot be used necessarily as precedents. Now that's cannot be used as precedents. And so the reason why that, well, I have to find exactly where I found that, and I do have it somewhere, right, the reference point. But I had to do some research. It was some years ago that I actually discovered that. But I'm going to tell you something. It's true. And it corresponds with what you just said, that the circuit court's decisions, they don't get used as precedents. And if you try to use a circuit court decision in your case and you're from a different, like state or county or whatever, it will not get listened to. In other words, you will get ignored. By
the
judge
in the Roman civil municipal de facto court that you're trying to appeal to, right?
Well, I'm just saying that the district courts are separate from the circuit courts, which are in a sense private. So yeah, and the Roman civil authority, like you're saying, is actually the district courts, which is a kind of like aspect of the larger body politic of the state, which represents the federal branch of the government in the state, the federal rights, protecting federal rights and all that. I mean, Charles, it gets so deep and convoluted, we could talk for hours
about
this. It'd
help if you define your terms. Are the district courts you're talking about federal or state level?
Yeah.
Can you define
this? Well, hold on now. They're in the district courts at the state level. This is the problem. Nope, this is the problem we're having, is that there are no district courts at the...
define district courts as being either state or federal.
There is no standard to measure whether there is a state district court. Tell me what district it would be of the state. You see, there's only federal district courts within the states. But within the states themselves, there's no district courts that are not federal. So what I'm telling you is that, it's crazy.
So you were referring to federal district courts when you were mentioning district courts, right?
True. But what I was really trying to imply was that we need to...
Jeremiah.
What I'm trying to share with people is that we need to establish these districts of our states. By doing the precinct and the 100 courts, we can do that. We can basically
where
take
are you deriving
entire...
the term district from?
Well,
Sixth
I mean,
Amendment?
Just... No, it's like... You could say that, I suppose.
Well, it's nice to know what the heck you're talking about, Jeremiah.
Well... You figure it out.
Well, no, you're the one coming up with the terminology. You figure it out before you start talking.
Well, you know that the crime, that if it occurs in the district, it should be tried in that district. Where is that? Is that the Sixth Amendment? Yeah.
The Sixth Amendment district you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're clear.
So, that Sixth Amendment district is that of the precinct level, in my opinion, even below the county, because the county...
I think you're correct. I think that was the original intent of the people who constructed the Sixth Amendment, yes.
Yep. Thank you.
And federal district courts are a wannabe lookalike for that, trying to rob the power, but they're inherently defective, and I think if pressed, the federal judges will admit that the originally intended Sixth Amendment districts are not the same as the modern-day federal district courts.
Right, and then you know what those are? What do you think? Do you think they're municipalities? In other words, like, say, San Francisco?
I know they are. It's municipal. It's Roman civil law.
See, that's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And the thing that blows my mind, Charles, is that San Francisco literally has precincts, a precinct map. Like, have you found any other city or county that has a precinct map?
Yeah, Clackamas and Portland, Multnomah.
Mm-hmm.
Almost every county has their own precinct map. I think I looked at Rick's in Illinois and stuff too. Yeah. Almost every county has their own precinct map.
That's interesting. That is interesting. Because those precincts, I believe, are the districts, under common law. And it could even go smaller than that.
Sixth Amendment. If you're talking about federal district courts, it's a whole different thing.
True. And I'm talking about the Sixth Amendment non-federal district courts, of course. So I'm talking about the ones under common law, whereby we get to actually have a trial by jury.
And we have criminal jurisdiction.
Yeah, there's a criminal jurisdiction, absolutely. Not civil. None of this, like, I'm going to,
well,
like...
that would include civil. If you can throw people in jail...
Oh, my God. What? Go ahead.
If you can throw people in jail as a result of your judicial jurisdiction, you can certainly handle anything of a civil nature.
Right. Well, okay, so this whole thing about the civil jurisdiction to be able to say, hey, someone can't come into the neighborhood or they have to stay away from a specific demographic or else they're going to be thrown in jail because they breached the restraining order. Yeah, something like a restraining order or whatever, right?
Yeah.
The problem with that is that is a mechanism of Roman civil authority, okay? The restraining order is nothing more than a mechanism of Roman civil authority, okay?
Right.
It's not common, in my opinion, it's not common law. How crazy.
Right. But all legitimate concerns that are sought to be addressed thereby can be addressed through common law process, criminal process, because the very concept of a breach of the peace, if somebody's stalking somebody and making them in fear for their safety, then that's a common law breach of the peace. And at that point, you don't need the equity jurisdiction restraining order
right.
place.
You know, anybody
can bring a common law breach of the peace complaint against anybody that's stalking them or harassing them. Boom,
yeah.
That thing goes to the jury because that's a criminal complaint. And if he's found guilty of breaching the peace and harassing somebody by stalking them, then you know, he can be punished as such.
Right.
And at that point, you don't need that problematic equity jurisdiction whatsoever involved.
See, police try to do that, though. They try to say that you match a description or whatever, or that they've been, you know, they've warned you before not to hang out in a certain area, or they're going to think that it's stalking. So if they see you there again, they're going to try to stick you with some sort of crime. So I don't know. I just I feel like I understand that stalking is, and all of these, there are common law crimes. Okay. Common law crimes. And those crimes are crimes that should be, you know, like, obviously applicable in the district by the people. Hold on. Well, right. And this is why the different communities' laws and charters are so valuable. Because without the charters, we're never going to know what a breach of the peace is.
Common law breach of the peace is all you need to have in your small community. You don't need a charter defining crimes in the statutory manner.
What if you have an anarchist community right next to a Christian community, next to a Muslim community? A breach of the peace is going to be different in every one of those different communities.
Well,
you know what
each
I'm saying?
Of those communities deal with it internally, but by their own community.
What I'm saying is that if we have to all live together under one common law, under one common law, a breach of the peace would be a violation of one of, like, being aware, basically, that the other community was there. Like, if you just totally ignored that the other community was there and you had your thinking, you know, of capacity, then, yeah, you could be charged probably with negligence in some way, you know, because you live in a community in another neighborhood which respects the common law, you know. So, like, yeah, there's certain levels of common law that once you accept the responsibility under the common law, you have to actually man up. And if you exist in an enriched common law environment, such as one where it's multi-religious and multicultural, it's a different level of awareness than we used to have 200 years ago. Like, we're in a whole new time, Charles. This is why we have such a huge opportunity, and you're an honorable man. You're an honorable man, brother.
Well, there are details that will need to be sorted out. Similar to what you advocate, although I dare suggest that the polarity that you're suggesting between Christians and anarchists, that's not going to really be nearly such a problem as I think you're apprehensive of.
Right, I was just giving an example. I'm not apprehensive necessarily, but...
It's really easy to conjecture all kinds of problems that when you start comprehending what responsible self-governing is under rules of common law, that if a bunch of anarchists want to construct something that is within the parameters that I just mentioned, they're going to have a little bit more structure than what traditional anarchy seems to allow for.
No, I totally get that. And that's exactly my point, too, is that with this technology of the common law, which has basically never really been have never come to fruition, as far as I can see, from society, because, I mean, from what we learn from the history books and stuff.
In the last 1,000 years or so, probably, yeah.
Right? If this was to happen, I mean, it would involve each different cultural demographic to embrace the other one under a wing of, I guess you could call it, what would you call it? It's like under the wings of grace, because you'd have to have some, right? You had to have grace and understanding that, you know, of some higher knowledge, basically.
Well, the biblical book of James references the perfect law of liberty.
Mm-hmm. What are you reading? Are you looking at the chat room? I haven't gone into the chat room.
I looked at it a moment ago. It looks pretty tame right now. Just you, me,
Who's
Allie.
Who's on the call?
Just you, me, Allie, and Mike.
Well, this is Allie, and I'd like to share something with you.
Please.
And then I have a dual question for you.
Sure.
What I want to share with you is a quote from Zeitgeist, or whatever you call it, the movie, where it says, Christianity, along with all other theistic belief systems, is the fraud of the age. It serves to detach the species from the natural world, and likewise each other. It supports blind submission to authority. It reduces human responsibility to the effect that God controls everything, and in turn, awful crimes can be justified in the name of divine pursuit. And most importantly, it empowers those who know the truth but use the myth to manipulate and control societies. The religious myth is the most powerful device ever created and serves as the psychological soil upon which other myths can flourish. Anyway, that's just the opinion from Zeitgeist, the movie.
From Zeitgeist? Are you there?
You sound like she hung up, right?
I knocked your phone. I'm adjusting to taking out the last Wi-Fi in my home, the cordless phone, and have a new telephone I'm using here now, a hardwired one. But
can you read
it
again?
Question, I want to go back to the gold and silver. And about that is, who puts the value, the dollar value, on the gold and silver? And did not Jesus throw out the money changers from the temple?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good point. Hey, yes, Allie. Charles, that was excellent.
I can't share the enthusiasm.
Well, I mean, she's saying who puts the value on it. Like, in other words, it's the local community that does it. You know what I mean? Like, think about it. Like, it's those people that actually place value on one particular thing or not. Like, imagine if you took a certain amount of Federal Reserve notes or accumulated wealth or whatever, right, of people and of a community, and created a cryptocurrency with it. So specifically for your local community, right? But then you reach an agreement with the county next to you and all the counties around you within your state to accept your currency because you're a part of the state. Dude, this shit could work. You have a great call tonight, by the way. It would really work. You understand? The cryptocurrency at the local level.
I think we owe a gratitude of thankfulness to Brother Charles, who is not only a great facilitator, but a great one in gathering great minds together. So thank you, Charles.
Thank you, Alan. And thank you also, Jeremiah. I think you said some complimentary words there, too.
Totally. I get excited, but it's not over-excited. I'm a very enthusiastic type of person, you know what I mean?
It's nice to have some reasonable expectations that we're actually going to achieve some worthy goals. And I like to think that we are capable of doing something like that, but I'm apprehensive about getting exuberant before we've actually got solid tools built to actually achieve
goals. Well, let me ask you a question, because you got my mind going. Remember, you know how the common law, like, is supposed to, it could be applied in all of the world, not just in California or in Oregon or in America.
It's international law.
It's an international thing, exactly. So I think a fair amount of, you know, getting over this concept that of a hatred for or a despise for some sort of new world order is probably in order. We need to not have a hatred towards bringing on, like, a new world order when we understand that what we've been force-fed throughout our lives is been nothing but statism, you know, and that as a local government, we're actually acting as arms of the state. That's a different approach altogether, you know. I mean, sure, let's make clear that the state government agents are there to serve particular purposes for particular reasons, and they don't have anything to do with the local community and their affairs. Like, it's, in other words, it comes down to the fact that just like the federal government doesn't get the right to police in the state, the state government doesn't get the right to police in the frickin' municipalities. And the municipalities don't get the right to police in the precincts.
But your word municipality there is out of context. I think you should use local government rather than municipality.
Fine.
Because
I think, do you get what I mean, though? I mean, like, in other words,
well, yeah, but your wording is really screwing up the whole proposition.
Okay,
it's
how
like
would you how would you say it?
Garbage in, garbage out. You use garbage words, you get it.
All right.
Municipality is a garbage word, Jeremiah.
Okay. It's a what?
It's a garbage word. It's a word for
okay.
a government, a form of government that reflects tyranny and despotism. The very
okay.
word municipal is related to the word municipum, which is emancipum.
I know.
That's a word for Roman slaves.
I know that, and that's why when I'm talking about...
Our slave
yes.
trader jurisdictions, Jeremiah.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about, yes.
Well,
I know that.
It's not a good word. It's not
it
a good
word,
word
for me.
Using when we're trying to decentralize the common
well,
law jurisdiction.
Let me clarify why I mentioned it. It's because that the municipal jurisdiction is nothing more than the jurisdiction that we apply to those agents that act in favor of the state. In other words, it's basically exactly what the Constitution is. The reason why the Constitution is about municipal law is because it only applies to basically the government. It does not apply to the people. And that's what makes it municipal. So
well,
the fact
Jeremiah,
that we can come up with our own charters, in other words, what I'm saying to you, brother, is if you're trying to take people power and move in a direction where you build and grow communities, you have to remember that there's a fine line between state action and people action. And if you can differentiate that line, then you're going to be successful with advancing the people's position. Without it, you're going to be competing, you know, against basically state doctrine and all kinds of precedent, you know. And the idea is to actually rise above all of that, right, by coming up with your own separate legislative position or state. And that's why quantum grammar is super powerful, because you can use it to create local charters that reach above the communication of the state, the de facto state, government, as well as the corporations, as well as the federal government.
Jeremiah.
All right, Charles. Yeah. Yeah.
I believe you're really a smart guy. Okay? And there under, I have really problems when you start talking really, really stupid stuff. I start questioning your motives. And then I remember back to things like what you do in Angela's call. And I start questioning your motives more. And it really, really, really pees me. And I think it's come a time here where we've had a nice long call here, and I need to take a breather.
So you're going to cut me off and tell me that I'm a dumbass?
I'm going to cut everybody off. I'm shutting down the call now. Okay. I wish you all well. We'll have another conference next week. It'll be on the other channel with constitutional guns.
No, it's just overloaded. It's all right. Yeah.
Call ID number.
Yeah.
And
no, it's too late.
But Charles,
I'm
I'll be honest with you,
buddy.
You can shut it down.
Yeah.
But you're on point, and
well,
I hope you stay on it.
I don't want to hear any. Your tone of voice now aggravates me, Jeremiah. I can't stomach it.
I don't care. I don't care, dude. I like you. You can hate it or not. You know, you like it or hate it.
Well, okay.
Yeah. You still there, Mike?
Hanging in there, but, you know, if he's still withstanding the call, that's okay.
Well. I don't think he's that stupid. It pisses me off. And I wish you and Allie well this evening, but Jeremiah gets under my skin. And I'm a little bit flustered, and I'm glad you and Allie was able to interact in less competitive and more graceful manners here. And I do hope to see you both again here soon.
Oh,
right,
you will, Charles. And
right.
I've had a really busy day in my neighborhood with everything going on here. And I still have to be somewhere else from 10 to 11 o'clock this evening. But I am just so, I have so much love and respect for you, my brother, because you are truly a light that shines upon us and opens up doors that we haven't looked behind before. And thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
I'm glad to be working with fine, fine people like you, your sister Allie, and you too, Mike. And Jeremiah is phenomenally talented, but that's why he's scary, is because he's got the magic words to do stuff and to make things happen, and but he's frequently moving in the wrong direction, and I'm sorry, that's dangerous, and I'm not going to hang around that. That's why he's on my not qualified electors list, and he's going to stay there, and he's not going to be allowed to.
I agree with that, but, you know, you and I both now on two occasions have decided to open up the mic to him.
Mm-hmm.
And my question would be about Jeremiah, is how old is he?
He's in his 40s, I think, 47, 43, I think 47, something like that.
Well, you know, I'm sort of seeing a little bit of change in heart in him. It isn't coming fast, but it is coming through. And, you know, sometimes our patience runs thin. And when it does, it's best that we say, you know, goodnight or move on and come back again. But with his determination to always be present, you know, he has to hear us. And if, you know, you never learn when you're talking, only when you're listening. And I think he's been listening, and I think he's doing better at integrating the truth now more than he was before, you know, when he was on with Angela.
There's times where I think exactly like you, Allie, but there's other times where I see this smart guy making really, really dumb statements that's leading towards despotism and tyranny,
And I start thinking, well, maybe he's not really that smart. Maybe he wants to move us towards despotism and tyranny. And that would mean that we got a subversive in our presence, not just merely a guy that's stupid.
Well, I think we're trying to pull him away from being a minion for Satan.
Well, maybe he's so closely bonded to Satan that he's beyond our capabilities of salvaging.
Okay. Well, I will take that under consideration, and I was amazed that he gave me his telephone information when I did have a pencil in my hand. But unfortunately, I didn't have a pencil in my hand when Ray gave his email address. It was ray@earth, and then I didn't get the last of it.
Let me scroll through the chat window here. ray@newearth.email.
Oh, wait a second. I have that wrong. Ray at what?
New Earth.
New Earth.
.email.
E?
Yeah, email is the word. It's .email.
ray@newearth.email.
No, that's it. Weird last after the dot. It's five digits instead of the normal three, and it's a word all by itself, .email. It's the first time I've ever seen an email address like that, but this guy's a computer programmer. He must be onto something new, techie type thing, and it's right there in his email address. I'd try it, and I bet
9% of it. @.email.
Yeah, ray@newearth.email, and that's the end of what it's all about.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, I must say I'm feel like the sun is raised a little higher in listening to what your intention for this call was this evening and the people you brought on board to share this information with us, and great appreciation for you, my dear.
Well, you're precious. I need good people around me like you and Mike and good others here. And Jeremiah and I don't know if you guys notice it, but we get a thing going back and forth where it starts turning into like a tornado or a whirlwind or something, and we start talking about all kinds of really neat stuff. He's got that competitive intellectual taint that it's like two martial artists getting together and sparring or something, you know. Very few people can interact with me in a legal competitive way that Jeremiah does. And so and it's kind of like dancing. It can almost enchant you and make you fall in love or something. But it can also go really, really bad. And that's why I get nasty and throw temper tantrums at Jeremiah, because he takes the dance off in the wrong direction way too frequently for me. And it's always leading towards tyranny and despotism or a really stupid level of confusion. And I don't think he's that stupid. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like being out of tune in the choir.
Doing what?
Being out of tune in the choir.
Yeah, he's not harmonizing with the spiritual music of God. He's always bringing in a Satan gong or something to messing up the music. It's always coming together in a nice, smooth, peacefully harmonious, nurturing spirit, and then Jeremiah's over there throwing in a monkey wrench and banging on a gong about something.
Yeah. Well, sending us off in a new direction before I say goodnight, I don't know if you're aware of an event that just happened down there at Portland University on Saturday.
Mm-mm. What?
There was a gathering of a whole bunch of what they call revisionists.
Okay, I think I may have seen something about that, but please elaborate.
Jim Fetzer and other guest speakers.
Okay.
Great conference down there. But on Sunday, Professor Jim Fetzer, are you aware of who he is?
I know the name definitely, and I think if pressed, I could probably remember a few facts about him. But please, I'm sure they'll fill in as you describe more.
Well, he's written 44 books. One of them is Nobody Died at Sandy Hook.
Ah, I think I know who you're talking about, yes.
Well, I'm very involved with Donald T. Gron, Don Gron, here in Seattle. And I think you know who he is. He has, for 14 years, has had 3 television shows on our local community, Seattle Community Media program here on Comcast 77.
He used to live down here in my area in Portland.
Who, Jim Fetzer?
No, Don Gron.
Oh, I didn't know he lived in Portland. Oh, I thought I knew a lot about him.
Huh?
That must have been many, many years ago.
Maybe closer to 20, yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to speak to Don about that. Anyway, Don has Professor Jim Fetzer, Lieutenant Scott Bennett, and former Marine Michael J. Anderson, who I call the Dynamic Trio, on his Truth Versus News show that plays on Thursdays. And so after a whole group of these revisionists for our history were at Portland University, and everybody thought that they were going to have protesters all over, and they didn't have any. Oh, in fact, Don's on the other line calling me right now, but I'll let him go to voicemail. But we had arranged to have him, Professor Jim Fetzer, in Seattle, and he was supposed to speak at a venue that they had already paid to have him there, and about 3 hours before he was to speak, they canceled us because somebody didn't like what he was speaking about. But we jumped into quick action here and got another venue that was even better. It was free of charge, and it was at the Seattle Library in the University District, and there was a wonderful presentation by him there, which was recorded by several people. And, of course, Don recorded it to be on to play on his TV show. And he posted it Sunday night after the event and on Monday morning, because Don not only plays it on his TV show, he posts it on his YouTube channel. And YouTube saw fit to take it down, saying, "This video has been removed for violating YouTube's policy on violent or graphic content."
Yeah. Well, this gets into the whole cryptocurrency and alternative technology thing, and that we need to construct our alternative computer system. We shouldn't be relying on YouTube and Facebook and Google. We need our whole.
Because they were all financed by the CIA.
Yeah. We need it all open source instead of feeding the secret money power and secret military police state power.
Oh, I'm so with you there, brother.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm just going to say goodnight, and quite often as I do when I leave a call, I have to offer my prayer protection for everyone
Please.
That is still on this call. And that
Please,
is may
Ali,
you
go.
Be safe, may you be well, may you have a protective shield above you, below you, and all around you, my dear.
Amen, please, Sister Ali.
And please personalize that prayer for yourself and pass it forward.
Well, it's going out to the whole world here on our public phone conference.
Yes, may you be safe, may you be well. May you have a protective shield above you and below you and all around you. And that protective shield is the white light of God.
There we go.
Thank you. Thank you, my dear. And I look forward to our next telephone conference.
All right, sister. We'll see you then.
Good night.
Good night.